here with episode 62 of the TV and Less video game podcast for TVandLess.net. Today we have Chris Dunn.
Yes, we do.
And we're all better for it. We also have Seth Gastelum.
Hi, how's it going, folks?
Are you speaking to us or the
listeners? The listeners, I guess. Or you, whatever. I don't care.
When I was a
kid, listeners aren't going to answer.
No, they're not. They might. No. They might. You never know. But when I was a
kid. That's the thing. You never know.
I tried talking into a TV. I don't know why. I think every kid tried to do that.
Yeah. Like, did you think it would work?
No, I don't think I thought it would work. I just wondered what might happen. You watch all these cartoon shows and they all communicate, dinosaurs or whatever. They all communicating over, like, video screens. And, of course, that shit really wasn't happening in, like, the late 80s.
I don't think I ever tried this. Why would...
I don't think I thought it would work, but I was like 4 or 5, dude. I also like pulled out the phone book and wondered how the phone would work, and like when I was 4, I would just dial numbers in the phone book.
I would do that.
Yeah. So. Hello? Click. Oh, son of a bitch, it worked. But that was me. So it's been a couple of weeks since our last podcast. I don't like doing that, but it's tough to keep up sometimes. I wish I had all the time in the world to record podcasts and write articles and make videos, but I don't. I worked like we just lost Chris.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh man, and you ruined what I was gonna do to you.
I'll get him back on here, but I wish I had all the time in the world to do these things, but I don't. Unfortunately, and so sometimes I have to go on the back burner. I worked like 70 some odd hours last week. Well, from the listener's perspective, that's like 2 weeks ago.
That's weird because I thought you told me that we didn't do a podcast last week because you were sick of our fan base.
I did say that, yeah. I remember saying that.
Yeah, I hate all those guys. Blah, blah, blah. Which doesn't make sense, really. It'd be because you hate me and Chris and you didn't feel like talking to us on the weekend.
Yeah, well, I like you guys, and I like our fan base. But then this week I worked another, like, 50-some-odd hours at my real job, and then I worked another, like, 8 at the Toy Vault, and now I'm recording this podcast. Welcome back, Chris!
What just happened?
You dropped.
I like that the Toy Vault is your fake job. Is Chris back? Oh, look who decided to show up.
Sorry, something came up.
Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Right.
No problem. I'm glad to be here.
When you call me back, Chris, I mean, that's a good way to let me know that you're on Skype, but I can't answer your call.
I didn't try to call you back. I have no idea what just happened.
Really? That was weird. I got a call from you. I had to decline because I can't answer you to the conference.
No, I didn't do anything.
Huh. Yeah. Thanks, Skype.
Skype rules.
Skype rules. But Skype. And then next week, and from the listener's perspective, I guess that's this week, but I work Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, which is great because, like, my first day back to work is, you know, when Skyward Sword comes out. And then, of course, Thursday is Thanksgiving. And then I work Black Friday at the Toy Vault. And then Saturday I'm recording a podcast. And then Sunday I work at the Toy Vault. Like, this is my life. This is my November. Like, so, I mean, that's part of the reason why, you know, we cut back on articles on the site. I was doing everything for a little while, but it just wasn't sustainable.
You're a busy little bee, Craig.
I am, and part of it's, like, humble brag, but part of it's, like...
Nah, it's, like, all brag.
It's all brag. Like,
no humble.
I work at the video game store.
Black Friday, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, apparently
we open at dinner. Look at you. You're eating Thanksgiving dinner. Good for you.
You know what? We open on midnight on Black Friday.
Really?
Yeah, because it's all this trickle down. Like, a couple of stores decided they were doing it, like Target, for instance. And then, our mall is right next to a Target. So, like, all the anchor stores in the mall, like JCPenney and, like, Macy's, were like, oh, fuck, we got to do that, too. And the mall's like, no, we're not open at midnight. And the anchor store's like, yes, we are. So they're open at midnight. GameStop's like, holy shit, we can sell more pre-owned games. It's open at midnight. So then the Toy Vault was like, fuck, we got to be open, too. So it's just trickle-down effect. And, everyone's open at midnight.
That sucks. I thought it was just, like, the stores like Macy's that have, like, an outdoor entrance, you know?
Right. I mean, yeah. But, I mean, I think mall security, I mean, the mall has to be involved with that in some way.
Yeah, so I guess that's true.
The mall's just like, yeah, okay. So I guess there are some stores that are going to be open at midnight.
That sucks. Do you have to work at midnight?
No.
Look, that's good.
No. He asked me if I can come in the morning or something, and I'm like, I can't. And when I rearrange my schedule, because I don't, on my days off, I don't completely alter my schedule. I'm still asleep for a good hunk of the day. You know, I get up maybe around 1 or 2. maybe as early as like 11 or 12 on certain days, but I can't completely alter my schedule because then I won't sleep for like a week. That has happened.
Right.
And yeah. So I said, no, I can't come in the morning. There's no way I can do that. But I was reading, like, there's like this petition, like some Target employee started a petition, like, we don't want to open at midnight. And it's like, you're a retail employee. That's part of the gig. Like,
doesn't Target like close at 10 where they can do like close for 2 hours?
I don't really know. Like the employees have to be in at 11. Like I was reading like the specifics of this petition, and I guess employees have to be in at 11 and to open the store at midnight. And some employees were upset because that could potentially dip into their Thanksgiving time. Uh-huh. Dudes, welcome to every year of my life. I work Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day this year. Like that's every year. Like I sort of feel like when you take a job, you sort of take it with, certain concessions that have to be made. It's not pleasant, but I'm like looking at this. I'm like, guys, suck it up.
Yeah, that's just the way it is.
It's not pleasant. Like if it were up to me, I would wave a wand and say nobody works on Thanksgiving, but I can't. I don't have such a wand. And you're working at a retail job, so that
dude, you should get that wand.
Just make yourself some like turkey the next day. Who cares? Fucking turkey.
Yeah, it's fucking turkey. Well, people like spending time with their family. You may not.
Who? What? Why would anybody want to spend time with their family?
I don't know. I kind of do. I'm kind of glad I have Thanksgiving off, but...
Gross.
Then I,
I kind of do, but, like, my family's in Connecticut, so I'm gonna start a petition to get my family to come to Wisconsin. Because this just isn't fair.
Are you... start a petition. Good luck.
I'll sign that. Whatever. Swing it on by.
No, I'm actually happy that I don't have to go see my family on Thanksgiving. Because when we lived in Connecticut, I'd have to go to, my parents are divorced and Jackie's parents are divorced.
Oh,
so we'd have to go to her parent, her mom's and her dad's and, my mom's and her grandparents and all these different places. So
that's dumb. You just pick one and go, congratulations, I love you the most.
Yeah. If only it was that simple.
Yep. It's not that simple. Are you coming out here for Christmas?
No, because we're getting married 2 weeks after Christmas.
Oh, you son of a bitch. What?
We'll see everybody then, but fuck that.
Oh, man. 2 weeks after Christmas? What? that's pretty close to, like, I mean, your life after that is going to just be a cavalcade of like, holidays.
Yep.
Make sure you have your kid, like, around that time, too. Plan it out. How have you guys been? How have you been, Chris?
I've been good, working a lot, but now I actually have this week off, partly because Zelda's coming out and I kind of want to have some time to play it, but also because my fiance's dad is coming into town for Thanksgiving, on Monday, and I was going to have to take the day off to go pick him up at the airport anyway, and I figured I might as well take 2 more days off because I got to use them before the end of the year.
He's going to be like, oh, all this dude does is play Zelda all day.
I know. He's going to be so pissed. But it's worth it.
He's going to want to watch football, and you're going to be playing Zelda.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. He can go watch football, and then I don't have to entertain him.
Yeah, where's the problem?
Yeah. I don't see that as a problem at all.
Everybody's happy.
Nice. Exactly.
I'm totally jealous of that time off, too, though.
Yeah.
What about you, Steph?
Chris, were you going to say something?
I wasn't really. I was going to trail off, and you guys just made it so easy to trail off. So.
All right.
Dot, dot, dot.
Nah, I don't know. I've just been working a lot, and my TV's still broken, and, like, I called the TV repair place guy, and I was like, I know what's wrong with it. I read, like, the service manual for
the
TV.
Did you look that up in the phone book like that?
What? No.
Do they still have phone books?
Yeah, I still get them. I'm like, Jesus, you guys heard the internet?
I used Yelp.
Nice.
Because Yelp is awesome, probably. But no, like, the guy said he wouldn't, like, fix TVs based on customers' requests or something. And
what? No, that's exactly what you're supposed to do.
he said, no, he'll have to run a diagnostic on it or something, and that is like $125.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like a guy who actually can't repair TVs and just goes, well, this is too hard, so I'm not doing it.
yeah, I don't know. And he said, like, they were, like, losing money from, like, following customer's like specific request on what's wrong with the TV. I don't know like know how. I mean, I would pay him.
I'm not going to ask him to do it for free.
Yeah, I don't know how that's like losing them. So whatever. I just like said screw it. I went on Amazon. I bought a bunch of like soldering stuff, and I like spent the whole day researching soldering and PCB soldering and all this stuff. So I'm just going to do it myself.
That is the weirdest interaction with someone. Like, nah, dude, I'm not going to do that because I just told you going to pay me and it might be too hard. So I'm just not going to fix your TV.
That's so messed up. I've never heard of that before.
It's like, really? Like, how do you know what's wrong with it? Well, it has this, like, blink code on it, and there's, like, this thing called the internet. And, yeah, he said, like, he wouldn't do it unless he ran his own diagnostics, which is $125 for him to, like, take a look at it. So screw that. I mean, I bought all the soldering
stuff. Yeah, how is he, like, not eating on that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to take a look at it and look on the internet, too. So that costs $120.
And then he's going to tell you the exact same thing you already knew.
Yeah, so whatever. I'm going to open that thing up myself and work on it. I mean, I've never done anything like this. I'm going to practice on an alarm clock or something first. But it doesn't seem that hard.
Yeah, soldering isn't that. I don't have any coordination. Like, I have some twitchy motherfucking hands. But soldering really isn't that bad.
Yeah, so that should work. Also, I've watched like 7 years worth of Beavis and Butthead in the last 2 weeks, so I feel like I like was progressively getting stupider as I was watching it.
Oh Jesus!
It's funny though, but I don't know. Like, kills my brain.
Maybe you should have done the soldering first.
Yeah, probably
before killing your brain.
Now I'm gonna be like
fire. Well, really, just more heat, but. You know what? I once bought Beavis and Butthead DVDs from, like, a commercial.
Uh-huh. Oh, from the Time Life
collection. Yeah, yeah. And, like, I was, like, the first time I ever ordered anything over the phone, I'm like, he's like, so what's your credit card number? And I'm like, is that okay to give over the phone? He's like, you called me. I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, did I call in time to get the bonus DVD? And he's like, sure. They don't know when the commercial's there. They don't give. They're just gonna give you that DVD anyway. They're just getting you to go to the phone right away.
You call in the next 5 minutes. Like, right. It's just all day. Right. Every time you see a commercial, exactly. The next 5 minutes. Yeah,
they don't know when the commercial's there. They don't care. That's just to cut out the middleman of you actually thinking over the purchase. They want you to not think about it and go buy the shit so you can get the free DVD. I don't even know what happened to those things. I don't. Whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's new Beavis and Butthead episodes on now. So
there is that too. Yep,
they may want to go back and watch the old ones.
I haven't watched any of the new ones yet. How are they?
The first like couple were really damn funny, and sort of been going downhill since. I don't know. I'm not feeling it.
Sounds like your typical like AAA like video game. Like, oh my god, the first level is just packed full of shit, and then like every other level is the same.
Yeah. Yeah, but nah, I mean, it's still decent. It's just not great. I don't know.
Right. Okay, well. Anyway, that's us. We work a lot, and we harass TV repairmen. So
I wasn't harassing him. I said I know what's wrong with this TV. Can you fix it? And he said, no, not unless I look at it first.
I would have harassed him. I'm like, okay, well, then look at it. Well, you know, my day is just, you know.
He was driving, too, so, like, I could barely hear him.
Oh, well, I'm glad he picked up his phone while he was driving.
Yeah.
People are terrible drivers. I don't know what the fuck happened. I've had my license for maybe 10 years, and in that 10 years, I've just seen, like, this huge decline in, like, people giving a fuck. No fucks are given on the road anymore.
Dude, since the time change, and, like, now people are, like, leaving work when it's, like, dark, like, it's even worse. Like, nobody could drive in, like, sunset. Sort of dark.
I see people. I mean, I'm sure Chris knows Route 12/1. It has a lot of lights and stuff. But like, people don't want to wait. They just fly. Every day I see several people blast through red lights. Just the other day, I saw four people because it was two lanes on each side of the road. They just went whoosh at the same time right through a red. I'm like, oh my god, you got to be fucking kidding me. Every day, no fucks are given.
Yeah, there's a turn by my work where everybody always runs the red light on the turn. It's a left turn. They run it on the left red arrow.
Well, you know, when I was in L.A., it seemed almost like, I mean, I know you don't live in L.A., but when I was in L.A., it seemed almost mandatory you'd have to run a red light on the
turn. I mean, I've driven through there. There's like a rule where like, once it turns red, everybody will stop and like let two cars through on the red because...
You're never going to go otherwise.
They didn't, like, build any, like, turn lanes there. So they're all, like, shared forward and turn lanes, and there's no turn lights there. I don't know what they were doing.
Yeah, see, because my town has, like, a huge military contractor that builds submarines, in addition to the primary naval subbase and the drug company Pfizer's, like, global research and development headquarters. Like, there's a lot of business here. And all the roads, all the lights are designed in a way to keep traffic moving on primary routes for, you know, the workers to and from these places. They're not on timers. I mean, there might be timers. There might be pressure plates under the road. But really, they're just designed to, like, give, like, 20 minutes to, like, one particular direction. And the other direction gets, like, maybe 15 seconds to get through the fucking light. And that's how they're designed here. There are, in some lights, there's no fucking arrows. You're like, how am I supposed to get through here? Because it's not designed for you to go down these little piddling roads. It's all for, like, the town doesn't give a fuck about fixing that shit.
Yeah, like, there's hardly any left turn yields around here anymore. So, like, even when I see them, I'm like, holy crap, I have to yield on a left turn? That's weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Used to dedicated turn lanes with dedicated turn lights.
Yep. We have some of those, but some places don't. And then you have people, like, wailing on their horn behind you, like, I'm waiting for the guy across the way to he has the right of way. Did you not read your driver's manual? How dumb are you? Don't honk at me, you fucking dick. I hate people just on the road. Like, everyone's a terrible driver but me. No one understands. When you went through driver's test, that just wasn't for your benefit. Like, you entered into, like, a social contract that says, I'm going to follow the rules of the road. In fact, they're laws. They're not even just rules. They're laws. They're called laws. We call them that for a reason. And you don't follow them. Quit being an asshole.
I have a family friend who ran a red light on her driver's test, and they still passed her, so...
I ran a yellow, and the guy chewed me out. I'm like, did you see what color that light was? I'm like, yeah, it was yellow. He's like, so why didn't you stop? Because I'm driving a big-ass pickup truck, and I would have been in the middle of the intersection if I tried to stop at this speed. Oh, well, I guess I'll just mark it as a judgment call then. How would you mark it as anything else? I didn't run a red. I wouldn't even call it a judgment call. I made a good – that was a good judgment call. You marked me down as a good judgment call. No, he didn't. Yeah, no, I got chewed out for running a yellow.
Yeah, well, this chick ran red, and he was like, oh, well, just practice more.
Oh, Jesus have Christ. Your license. So.
That's messed up.
That is cool. Anyway, so video games. We all play those, and I'm sure we really enjoy them, and this is a good time of year for most gamers. So
Those with TVs.
Get a new TV.
No. I need to fix this. I love this TV. You don't even know.
Completely understand, yeah. But if it comes down to, like, playing my games or not playing my games, get a new TV.
Well, if the soldering goes awry, then I'll get a new TV.
Okay, fair enough. You'll have to keep a surprise.
I will. Also, I might, like, electrocute myself and die.
I don't want that.
Touch a capacitor or something, so that might happen.
I like you too much. I just might buy you a new TV so you don't kill yourself.
I'll give you all my games if I die.
Hey, have at it, Hoss.
Yes.
So we have a little bit of news here, not a whole lot. Surprisingly, I think people are just focused on pumping out games rather than press releases this time of year. So, but anyway, Sony in Japan has detailed a way to get your physical UMD PSP games on your brand new Vita, and it's a pretty interesting process. It's not too dissimilar from what Nintendo did getting your DSiWare games on your 3DS. Essentially, on your PSP, you log in with your PSN account and you download an application from the PSN store, and then you put in UMD, and that application goes, okay, I got it. Now, no one else can actually register this DVD, but now it's tied to your PSN account. You fire up your Vita, log in with that same PSN account. You can then download that game from the PlayStation store, if it's available, for a discounted price. When I first started hearing about this, I thought maybe that it would be, like, just a small license fee, kind of like how Rock Band allows you to transfer the songs from Rock Band 1 to Rock Band 2 by paying, like, what is it, like $5 or something like that?
Yeah.
Because it's just a license fee. You're not paying a discounted price for Rock Band 1. You're just paying for the licenses, which is exactly what it should be. So while this program is interesting, you still can pay upwards of, like, $20 for, like, a game on UMD that you might have paid. I mean, I pay, like, rock-bottom prices for UMDs. They don't hold their value here. You wait a couple months, and poof, they fall down in price. So I could be paying more to transfer my Vita than what I paid for the actual physical UMD.
Now, can't you just, like, let a friend borrow the game and then have
him... No, because apparently Sony has set up some way that, like, each UMD is a special snowflake.
Oh,
I don't know how that works, but apparently that's the case.
Interesting, and you still have to pay, like, $20.
And you still... Yeah, I mean, some can be much lower than that. That's the high end. That's the high end, yeah, yeah. I mean, you can play as low as, like, a couple dollars. But it depends on the game. And, again, it's just a discounted price. I mean, if I was paying, like a $5 license transfer fee, I would be okay with... I wouldn't do it, obviously, with every game, but I would be tempted to scoot over some of my, you know, favorite UMD games to the Vita just to have them wherever I go. But if I'm paying...
Can you do this with every game, or is it just like a...
Whatever...
Is there, like, only certain games that you could do this with?
Well, first of all, they have to be available on the PlayStation Store, because if they're not available to download, there's no way to do it. And I think they have to be part of the program, but there are, like, a few hundred games that are a part of the program. So, I mean, so there are going to be some games that, yes, you can't do this with. But I would say that a good hunk of games you can probably do it. So, it's not a bad idea. I actually really like it. I just think that it's a little too expensive. I don't mind paying for a license transfer. I get. I don't like that, but I get it. But paying for, like, the whole game just at a discounted price, not so hot.
Yeah.
Not so hot on that. And what sucks is, like, Sony just, like, reduced the amount of, like, PSN accounts you can have tied to your machines. It used to be five.
Like two now, right?
Yep, it's five console, five handheld. And that's handheld, by the way. So, like, PSP and Vita both count as handhelds. Now it's only two per. So you can have two PS3s and two handhelds. So one PSP and one Vita.
Is that confirmed? I know I had heard two PSP. I hadn't heard.
I had read two. We'll source that out and we'll verify that next episode. But I had read two handhelds.
That sucks.
Which means that, like, I was going to use, like, my old PSP, right? The screen's going, which isn't great, but the real reason why I replaced it is because the UMD drive was going. That was much bigger. I could have lived with the splotchy screen until the Vita came out, but I was going to use it as, like, just one where I could just put in a huge card and just maybe download stuff to it, whatever. Now I have to deactivate that when I get a Vita. I have to turn that account off.
Huh.
Kind of a... I mean, it's not that hard, don't get me wrong. It's just kind of a pain where just, you know, a couple months ago, I wouldn't have had to do that.
Yeah.
No. And this was done to stop game sharing across five accounts, right?
Right. I would assume so. But Sony, even in some interviews, like people from Sony talked up like this ability to share accounts and share games. And I'm like, yeah. It seems like everything that like I liked about the PS3 or what Sony was doing, they keep just undermining it. Like, oh, cool. You get to run Linux. Oh, no, we're going to take that away. Like, oh, you get several accounts and you can share games. Oh, no, we're going to take that away. And, like, pretty soon they're just going to make updates longer. they're just going to make things
longer. I don't think they can make them any longer.
But, well. But, you know, the program seems kind of neat. I would wish that the actual cost of this was a little cheaper.
Maybe it'll be cheaper. I mean, these are Japanese prices, right? Or are these U.S. prices?
No, these are all based in Japan, of course. These are all converted to dollars. So it might even be cheaper. So that's a good point. But, I mean, even if we sort of adjust and say, like, okay, the highest you'll pay is $15, it's still a lot, I think, to just transfer. Like, I already paid for the game. I'm just transferring the license. But in essence, what Sony's asking you to do is buy the game again just for a little less money.
I mean, honestly, I could understand if you could, like, rip multiple copies of the same game because – but, I mean, if they have it where it's unique to each game printed, then, yeah, I don't see why it's so much at all.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I agree. So it would be nice to have a few games on the Vita. Like I like the idea of like Nintendo's ambassador games. Like it's really cool to have like 10 NES games and soon to be 10 GBA games wherever you go. I already own a lot of these games, but the fact that they're all on one machine and I can fire them whatever, that's really convenient. That's great. And so I like this idea to have a few games on my Vita as well, but they're gonna cost too much. Like no dice. No thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see here. Steam was hacked. Now, from what I understand, it was the Steam forums that were hacked.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
But somehow, like, the hackers managed to gain access to a database that had, I don't know, I guess, hashed and salted passwords as well as some encrypted credit card info. So the likelihood of the hackers being able to do anything with those, like probably like the Sony hack, probably not very high. It still kind of sucks that people have my shit. I'm not too happy with that.
That's all right. They're salted and encrypted.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
It's I. salted and encrypted. But that sucks. I would advise people to, I guess, I mean, here's the thing, though. The forum password is different than your Steam account password. If your two passwords are the same, you should probably change your Steam account one. Just to be on the safe side.
I can't, I was at work when I read this, and I was like, I better log into Steam.
You can't do it through Steam powered store.steampower.com. You can't do it through there. You have to do it through the client.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't even log into that anyways because I, like, don't know my password for Steam. Because when I'm at home, it just auto-logs in.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to do it, too, and I'm like, well, I don't feel like firing up the client because I haven't done it in a while. I have to sit through, like, updates and shit.
Yeah.
And then eventually I caved and tried it, but it wouldn't log me in through the client either, so whatever.
Huh. Yeah, then your account's already hacked.
I know. Bum. Oh, well. But that's something to keep in mind. Maybe watch your, you know, the credit card that might be associated with your account. Change your password. Just, you know, the typical, you know, I guess, stuff to keep on top of it. But odds of anything happening are probably pretty slim. But I'm glad that Valve came out and said it as soon as they knew about it. That was probably the one thing that pissed me off about the Sony one, where, like, it seemed like they were just dragging it along, like, oh, this is just maintenance.
Yeah.
You know, but Valve's like, hey, we've been hacked, so. But I doubt anything will come of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's too bad.
What's up?
I said I don't think it was too bad.
Probably not.
And it's not like they could take any money from me. I'm broke all the time, so.
PETA attacked Mario, Super Mario 3D Land, and the Tanuki suit. And it's so weird, because, like, I don't think anyone associates wearing a Tanuki suit with, like, wearing fur.
Not even close.
No.
Like, PETA's, like, the first thing that made me even think of that. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I guess.
This is weird. And of course, the internet blows up with it, and that's exactly what PETA wants. Like, just shut up. Move on with your life. Don't talk about it. PETA are a bunch of fucking trolls. They're just trolling you.
I mean, apparently Tanuki can run around just fine without their fur. I don't see what the big problem is.
They're also not very big. I don't think you could wear their fur as, like, a suit.
That's why you have to skin several.
Crit. Yeah, you got to get a few of them.
Well, it looks like Mario just kind of ripped out, like, the Tanuki from the fur and just kind of jumped in.
He even washed it first. He just has blood all on his clothes. I don't know what he's doing.
Let's go.
Mario's lost his mind. Yeah. Also, like, have you played the game? Like, the levels are just, like, full of giant dead Tanuki in the background and such, and there's blood everywhere.
No, I'm not giving them my clicks.
Ah. So I can't catch Mario, though, dude. It starts going too fast.
I don't understand the premise of this game.
You're a Tanuki, and your skin has been ripped off by Mario, and he's flying, and you chase him. It's like auto-scrolling, and all you really do is jump. You just time your jumps.
These sound like really boring games that they come up with. Didn't they do this like Super Meat Boy as well? They had Super Tofu Boy.
Oh yeah,
probably.
I think didn't Team Meat put like Tofu Boy in, like, in their game as like a DLC character for like the PC version or something.
I don't know.
Like, two can play it at that game. Street Fighter 2 coming to the Virtual Console, and it will have online play.
That's weird. It's the Genesis version of Super Street Fighter 2, right?
Yes. Yeah. And apparently, like, whoever was working on this had a campaign really hard to get that in there.
Huh.
And so it's really more of a testament to the developer rather than, you know, Nintendo, you know, sort of being selective on what games get extra features, but they really should have just done this from the beginning. Some of these basic features on the Virtual Console really, it could be bare bones online play for all I care. Simple matchmaking, maybe even friend codes. I don't care. Like, online play is so simple. Leaderboards, maybe if the developer is feeling, you know, ambitious. But I really feel like these things should have been there from the get-go.
I don't know. Like, I mean, can you imagine, like, all the co-op games, if they would have had online multiplayer, that would have been, like, awesome.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's great that this game is getting it. I have no intention of buying Street Fighter 2, but for those that want to play it, that's really cool that it's getting it. But These, I really feel like these things should have been there in the beginning. It's nice that these are sort of like pure, like the games as they once were. I mean, I think on the one hand, that is really cool. But on the other hand, if a game doesn't really have online play, I'm probably not going to be able to play it with anyone. Dana and I will once in a while play a game together, once in a great while, and sometimes, like, I'll have, you know, one of my friends over and we'll play it. But that's once every, like, 6 months, you know? It just doesn't happen that often, so... On the one hand, I can appreciate the preservation of the game as closely as to what it was when it first came out. But then again, some very basic features would have been nice, too.
Yeah. I think so. Well, they updated some games, like Pokemon Snap and such.
Which is my point as well. Like, if you can... Didn't they also change, like, I think it was, like, Tecmo Bowl or something like that, where they changed, like, the team names or something like that?
Possibly. Yeah, did they take out the NFL license?
I think so. I think that's what it was, and they gave them generic names, yeah.
I think that's, like, how in Wave Race, they took out, like, the ads in the background for Kawasaki or whatever.
Yeah, So
that's right. The original Tecmo Bowl, it didn't have team names, but it had some real players. They took out the players' names.
Oh, that's what it was? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So, I mean, obviously they've done these things before, so... But, I mean, it's probably a lot easier to remove, like, a graphic or a sprite or something. A couple of lines of text than it is to add, like, netcode, but...
Yeah.
I think it would have been nice if the option was there for developers. Developers didn't necessarily have to embrace it, but if developers wanted to,
yeah, it would have been nice. I heard that this, the original Genesis version of this game had some sort of online play, and that's why they were able to implement it through that.
Well, it did. It there was X-Band. X-Band was not an officially, like, licensed product.
I have Super Street Fighter 2 for Genesis. Was it, like, in Japan only?
No, X-Band was released here in the U.S., and it was, like, it was a modem that you connected.
And Super Street Fighter 2 is compatible.
And certain games are compatible. But you're not going to see it in the game. Like, I don't think you're going to see, like, a menu in the game. It's that all the handshaking is done through X-Band. It's not done through the game. How that works, I don't know, because I've never really used X-Band, but it wasn't, like, an officially licensed product.
So there wouldn't, like, be anything in the manual for it?
Nope, don't think so. I think X-Band was also available for the SNES. Let's see here. X-Band was an early online console gaming network for SNES and Sega Genesis. It was produced by Catapult Entertainment, a Cupertino, California-based software company. Made its debut in various areas in the United States in the late 1994 and 1995. It's a precursor to modern online gaming social network seen in 6th and later generation video games, such as PlayStation, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, we all know that. These are not officially licensed. It's almost like you stack it like the Sonic and Knuckles and Sonic 3 cartridges. Due to the limits of dial-up, many games were high in latency. For example, in January 1996, Mortal Kombat 3 for the SNES was nearly unplayable due to the complexity and speed of the game. But yeah, these were not things that were like built into the game. I think basically X-Band, like, hacked the game to, like, it was like Game Genie and then just shot it over the internet.
But Chris said that it was in the game already, some sort of...
This is something I heard.
Maybe
I don't know exactly what I heard,
The way X-Band worked. Maybe. Maybe he's not mistaken. I did not read that. But, I mean, maybe he's not mistaken in the sense that whoever implemented this netcode built off what X-Band did.
All right, well, thanks for lying to me, Chris.
Anytime.
Two pricing plans were available, one with a monthly fee of $5, which allowed the user to connect to the service up to 50 times a month, with an additional connection costing 50 cents. I don't know, I don't think I would connect more than 50 times a month. And one with a monthly fee of $10, which grants the subscriber unlimited connections per month. If you got a dropped, if it dropped your call, you might have to, like, dial again.
Just leave the thing on. Never turn it off.
And activities that consume the player's monthly allowance of connections include dialing into the X-Band service for matchmaking, downloading mail called X-Mail, nice, and downloading the daily edition of two X-Band newsletters, one containing generic news, the other containing platform-specific information. Players were also assessed a fee of $4 an hour for connecting to opponents outside their local calling area. So, like, everyone.
Oh, holy crap.
$4. That's awesome. Oh, man. The modem featured built-in storage for up to four users, code names, It stored the user's friends list, which could contain the codenames of up to 10 other users. The user's Xmail box is storing up to 10 incoming and 10 outgoing messages for each user.
Wow, that's 20 total.
Yeah. Text entry was done either through an on-screen keyboard and an optional X-Band keyboard add-on. At its height, X-Band had 7,000 subscribed members. So, yeah, basically...
Nobody had this.
Nobody had this. So... But yeah, that was X-Band. I remember seeing like ads for like, oh, you can play online. I'm like, what's online? I don't know what the internet is.
I don't think I ever saw anything for it.
But this was not officially. Yeah, I remember seeing them like heavily discounted, like Toys R Us. But I mean, these really were not wide support. I mean, the first official like system to go online was the Sega Saturn, and even then, it really wasn't that many games. It was only a couple, like Duke Nukem, and I think. I think Virtual Racing, maybe one of those, was online as well.
Did the Saturn have a modem? Where'd the modem go?
Cartridge slot? I don't have the modem. It's not terribly common, and I have no use for it. I would just buy it for collecting purposes, and I'm not interested in doing that right now. But yeah, there was a modem for it. It came late in its life, and, you know, that's Sega expanded off that for the Dreamcast, which had it right out of the box.
And it was awesome.
I think it was called Netlink. Let me look it up here.
This is what was called Netlink.
It goes in the plugs in the cartridge slot. Has a couple cables coming out of it. Unit sold for $200.
Wow,
that's an expensive modem. Or $400 bundled with the Saturn. Oh wow, that's what a deal.
You save no money.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Daytona. It was a particular version of Daytona. Duke Nukem 3D, Saturn Bomberman, Sega Rally, and Virtual On. So, like, basically nothing.
That's nothing. Holy crap.
And apparently Netlink ran off X-Band. It was an X-Band device. I guess Sega must have contracted them to do that. That's interesting.
Actually, there's still more online games than GameCube.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's interesting is, like almost all of those were, like... Sega games.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was Phantasy Star 1 and 2.
Phantasy Star.
Card, yeah. And then Card Revolution. And then, was there anything else?
I think that's it. Just the Phantasy Star games is all.
They had Homeland. I know they had Homeland in Japan because I bought that game. And that's pretty cool. That was like a dungeon crawler where, like, one person, like, you play online, like, one person's, like, the dungeon master. And you can drop traps and stuff on people as they're playing. It's really kind of cool. But that never came out here.
Hmm.
But. Anyway. A little bit of a history lesson there, I guess. So I guess the core point there is that Street Fighter 2 is coming to the Virtual Console online play.
That's what we were talking about.
I know. I love how sometimes our topics go off the rails there, and then you sort of have like these bit of pauses and stumbling dialogue. But I think in the end we all learn something from these. So I like the way sometimes our topics can do that. Speaking of topics, we don't have any this episode because we have. Other things to talk about, and
I would like to ask a question. Did either of you guys see the whole thing about Telltale Games like leaving reviews for their own game Jurassic Park on Metacritic?
Doesn't surprise me.
I how do you feel about that? Do you think that's
I feel like it's a moral gray area. I mean, you know, I gave this podcast 5 stars in iTunes.
What? Me too.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that really that different? I don't think so. I mean, we're not a major studio, and we don't make commercial products, so maybe there's some difference there. But at the same time, I don't think that that's bad. I mean, if you're proud of something and you want to say that you're proud of something...
Yeah, I mean, Telltale's official response was that they didn't tell their employees to do that, and they don't censor what their employees post on the internet.
Right.
So, basically, Telltale Manager says it's completely hands-off.
Uh-huh.
They wanted to do it. We let them do it. We don't care.
Yep.
These are, like, user reviews, not, like,
user reviews on Metacritic. Yeah. And people are like, oh, well, they should have disclosed that they're Telltale employees. Why? I mean, if they like the game, they like their own game. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I think it's a gray area. Maybe they should have not done it. Maybe they should have said they were Telltale employees. But at the same time, I don't really see the harm. What really does that impact? What do two Telltale employees really impact on Metacritic anyway?
And this is the other thing. Like, all these people are getting up in arms over it, and it's just Metacritic.
Yeah. Don't people just go to Metacritic for, like, the actual reviews anyway, not, like, user reviews?
They just go there for a number.
Yeah. I don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah, me neither.
Did you read the reviews? They're, like, kind of hilariously glowing.
No, I didn't bother. I'm like, whatever.
They're pretty short, but they're pretty funny. They're like, oh, it's like if Heavy Rain was directed by Steven Spielberg. But, no, they're pretty funny. I don't really care, personally. I think that, I mean, these guys worked on this game. They obviously wanted to do well, so they like it, so whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. I'm trying to find what's really bad about this. I mean, I guess people are, maybe people feel it's dishonest. But I mean, really, what's dishonest about it? I mean, I don't know. I'm trying really hard to care, but man, I gotta tell you guys, like, it's really hard for me to care about this. I'm gonna have to try really hard to muster some concern about this. But I guess just in the end, it must have been a slow news day for all the blogs. So
yeah, I think so.
I don't know. And of course, Telltale's already all this bad press after like this Jeep thing that no one really knows about. It so there's a bunch of people shouting back and forth on Reddit and like, just guys, let it go. Why is it such a big deal? Who fucking cares? Yeah. For those listening who don't know what's going on, of course Telltale Games has a Jurassic Park game coming out. They contacted someone that has, I assume it's a replica, I don't think it was actually used in the film, but it was a replica Jeep Wrangler that looked like the Jeep Wranglers in the film Jurassic Park. They used it in promotion of the game. Apparently there was some damage done to it in transport. There was some contention as to who's responsible for that. I suppose the head of Telltale finally said, I will pay for it out of my pocket, but I don't really feel it's our responsibility, but I will pay for it because it is damaged. And like, the internet's so angry about this. I'm like, this is a private concern between, I mean, obviously it was aired publicly, but I mean, at the same time, like the actual concern is between Telltale and the person who owns this Jeep. There's no concern at all for you as a gamer. There's none. This is, I don't even know why people even paid attention to this. Yawn and move the fuck on. There's nothing to do with here. So everyone's all angry at Telltale as it is. And I think part of me feels like the media is just sort of already playing on that negativity because Telltale's sort of like a hot topic and it's like, and they're writing user reviews. Isn't that terrible?
That's exactly what I got from it.
You know.
But, I mean, even, like, the person who was responsible for, like, taking the shipment and stuff, they said, no, it was fine. This person was scamming us from the beginning or something, too. So there was a little...
Yeah, there was, like, yeah, there was
back and forth there.
Whatever. That's their business. It's not mine. I don't care. And, honestly, I'm not, like, super huge into Telltale games anyway because I just don't like the genre. So I don't... Fucks are not being given on this day. you know what else I wanted to talk about? Was GameSpot's review of Skyward Sword. Did you guys read that?
I did not read. I'm like on Skyward Sword Blackout. So.
Okay, fair enough.
Same here.
Yeah, same. Okay.
I saw the number, though. I've read about it.
Right, because it was this huge deal because it was like, it had to be. I don't know if it's like the lowest score because I don't really give a fuck about Metacritic or scores anyway. But people were upset because I don't even know who the writer was, but he gave it a 7.5. And people are all up in arms, 7.5, it's getting perfect 10s everywhere else. That means you have to fall in line, you asshole. And here's the thing, I don't care what he gave it. You know, like, if he wrote a review and there were things that made him feel like this game was a 7.5, he's completely entitled to that. But the problem is, when I first started reading the review, I felt like he wasn't a very good writer. And that's not a character assassination. Oh, don't take this guy seriously. Don't take the 7.5 seriously because he's a bad writer. But, I mean, I really didn't feel like it was a very well-written review. One of my problems with the review was that he used the word you a lot. And sometimes that's okay in a review because you're talking to an audience that is potentially going to be playing this game. So when you say something like, as this protagonist, you'll make your way through 7 levels of terror, you know? Like, that's a really bland sentence. But, you know, sentences like that are used in reviews. Because that's an objective statement. If you play this game, you will make your way through 7 levels. There's nothing inaccurate about that. But this person never owned any of their own criticisms. They kept using the word you. They would say, like, you know, they said something about how, like, the structure was too traditional and that the traditional structure would not distract you from the bad controls. And it's like, hey, asshole, how about I make up my own mind about how I'll feel about the controls? don't tell me how I'm going to feel. I mean, the problem there is that it's sort of, like, arrogant. It's sort of suggesting that how you feel is how I'm going to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is that there's no ownership. There's no ownership to the criticism. If you have a problem with it, say you have a problem with it. Don't try to project it. Don't make it sound so universal that everyone reading this review is going to have this problem.
Clearly they don't.
You know, I mean,
I had trouble with the controls, blah, 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 you know?
Right, right, exactly, exactly. And it's okay to write things, you know, that don't end in my opinion at the end of it. I mean, we talk about writers writing good reviews, but readers need to be good readers too. And they fly off the rails all the time. Like, how dare you say this? And like, blah, 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 blah. Look, dude, if it really makes you feel better, imagine every sentence ending with, in my opinion, in parentheses. You need to be a good reader just as much as that person needs to be a good writer. So a good writer can write with authority on the topic that they're knowledgeable about without saying, in my opinion, after everything. You know, of course it's his opinion. It's a review.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But this is projecting on the audience, and I wasn't too happy about it. I'm like, this is not a very good review. This guy gets paid for this. This guy pays his bills with this review, and I can't get a job reviewing games. That's awesome. but it turns out the guy wasn't even controlling the game properly. He kept trying to use IR and the infrared, and Skyward Sword doesn't use infrared. It's Wii Motion Plus. It doesn't need to. Now, if you play Wii Sports Resort, you might have a better understanding of how this game works. Like, for example, when you use the bow and arrow, you hold your Wii remote vertically. The infrared camera is actually pointing at the ceiling when you use the bow and arrow. You actually hold it vertically like you would be holding a bow because Wii Motion Plus knows where it is in 3D space. And then you aim by moving it around. This chucklehead was pointing the infrared camera at the screen. And then for the majority of the review, bitching about how the controls were unresponsive. And it turns out this was discovered, and you know, a sort of like side note, footnote was put at the end of the review saying, "Oh, gee whiz, I done goofed." And then he turned around and said, "But that doesn't affect my score of the game. You played the game absolutely 100% incorrectly, and that doesn't affect your review or your score." Like, it's amazing that GameSpot higher up said, "Yeah, that's okay, that's fine."
I'm baffled by this. I mean, especially since people are always complaining about, like, tutorials in games. Apparently they need them because...
Yeah.
Absolutely. That blew my mind. So, you know, don't take that GameSpot review seriously. I encourage people. Not because it's a 7.5, and not because this guy's a bad writer, although that's probably more, you know, of a reason to than a 7.5, but because this guy could not play the game and then could not own up to his own error. That blows my mind.
Yeah.
And things like that just sort of make the rest of us who write reviews look bad. Because it's easy to overlook things. Look, we're all human. I mean, when you're playing a game, like the quote-unquote average player, you're going to overlook things. You're going to forget things. And, you know, that happens when you're a critic, too. Ideally, you should do that less because you are being paid to not do that. But it happens. But not knowing how to control a game completely, that's completely, like, out of left field. Like, that's just, it's gone.
Yeah, and then not even, like, changing the review.
Oh, I know. That review should have totally been handed off. GameSpot should have pulled that review and handed it off to someone else who knows how to play a game. Who knows how to, like, maybe RTFM or pay attention to tutorials because this guy clearly didn't. And to think that, like, having trouble with the controls, like, the game, you know, obviously not responding to your controls because they're wrong, didn't sour your experience on the game. I mean, that's bananas. Of course it soured your experience on the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your own fault that it soured your experience, but your experience was soured, and that's going to translate into a review, and that doesn't, you know. That review should – he should have stepped away from that, and that review should have been handed off to someone else. GameSpot should have pulled it and done it again.
Yeah.
I think so.
I read a thing. He said that it didn't matter whether he knew that it was IR or not because either way you're playing the game the same way, but you don't. You're not supposed to be pointing at the screen.
Right. So I think his justification was, well, you know, you still have to recalibrate and stuff. So, like, it totally stands. No. Here's the problem. Here's the thing. My understanding with my admittedly limited experience with Wii Motion Plus, because there aren't that many games that use it, is that if you flail around like an asshole and hold the Wii remote in ways that the game's not expecting, that actually decalibrates, that desyncs Wii Motion Plus faster than if you're using it correctly. So you have people saying, oh, you can just waggle around and kill the enemies, but then I have to recalibrate Wii Motion Plus. That's your own fault. Like, not only are you robbing yourself of the challenge of the game, it's almost meta in a way. It's almost like, you know, people exploit games all the time, and there's no repercussion to it. Because the game just can't parse that. It doesn't know that you're exploiting it. And in this sense, Skyward Sword doesn't know that you're exploiting it either. But you still get punished for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting. So if you want to waggle around and use the IR and think that doesn't make a damn bit of difference, from my understanding, from my experience, that's going to decalibrate Wii Motion Plus faster. And that's going to sour your experience. So maybe play the game the way it's supposed to, or RTFM or something here, because that's what's going to happen.
That's read the fucking manual.
That is read the fucking manual.
That's assuming it even comes with a manual.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, you know, I've seen the European one. It has a spine.
Seriously?
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, obviously that's due to the languages, but clearly it's not. It's not just a slip of paper. So,
I mean, the manuals already get big over here with the just Spanish and French.
Right. Right.
But do you have Mario 3D Land, Seth?
No, I do not.
Oh, so you haven't seen that manual?
It's just a fold-out pamphlet.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it just has the big... Well, you know, honestly, for Mario, what do you need? It just has the controls on it, and there's a digital manual. Like, when you're on the 3DS, like, menu with all the tiles, that, you know, at the bottom of the screen, like, you can click here to, like, close the application or open it. Next to it, there's a digital manual, like some of the downloadable games have.
You
can
that's neat. Instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But you're going to have to read it. If you're having problems, you're like, damn, this game doesn't work. When every other review says these controls work beautifully and you're, like, struggling, you got to think for maybe just for a minute that the problem is you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, you know, everybody calls you out on it and you say, oh, well, no.
Yeah. No.
I mean, really, if you're playing a Nintendo game and you think it controls awful, you should probably look into what you're doing wrong because...
Yeah.
I seriously doubt Nintendo will let something like that slip anyway.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I will defend someone like Simon Parkin to giving Uncharted, you know, one of the lower scores, an 8, which is still a great score, because he completely defended why he felt that way. From Eurogamer, we talked about this before. Uh-huh. Yeah. But in this case, this dude, like, he totally fucked this thing. And I think this is where being a good reader comes into play. You have to be able to look at someone like Simon, like somebody like Simon Parkin's review, and understand that he has an opinion. It might be different from yours, but he's able to articulate why he feels the way he does, and that's perfectly fair, even if it's different from how you feel. But this guy is just objectively wrong at GameSpot, and as a reader, you have to be able to parse that stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, somebody. I mean, who called him out on playing the game wrong? Did he realize it himself?
He must have, which is, on the one hand, you kind of have to admit the courage to say, yeah, I played it wrong. But then he just totally said, but that's okay, because the review's still cool. The biggest thing I complained about throughout the entirety of the review, I fucked up, but that's okay, because the game's still... Like, nah, man.
Oh, well.
Yeah, oh well. I mean, but I'm not pointing this out to incite people to be angry at GameSpot or, like, because I'm a huge Zelda fan. I'm pointing this out because, you know, I value good writing in the video game community, and we have a lot of mediocre stuff. We have quite a bit of bad stuff, but we don't have a whole lot of good stuff. The good stuff's there, you know, but there's a lot of average writing, and I would like to see more of the good stuff and less of this bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But anyway, no topic today because we're just ranting and raving about all kinds of things. And we have a lot of listener questions. And if you, dear listener, would like to give us a listener question, check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TVandLust. And we throw up a status every week saying, hey, give us free material for our podcast here. And we'll answer it.
Well, it's so much easier to have other people come up with things.
Right, right.
Like, who wants to sit around thinking of what to talk about?
None of you do, apparently, so...
Yeah, I mean, well, you came up with the idea to ask for questions, though, so really, you did the work.
I'm like a Chinese gold farmer, like, wow, I'm just farming all your questions for my own benefit. Grant Loki, Grant Loki, who does the Fuster Cluck podcast, which you guys should check out, it's in iTunes. He says, assuming you were to become a major source of game reviews, not bloody likely to happen, would you ever score a game lower to bring attention to your site? This is it. What if you knew it would bring you 3 million clicks? Now, we don't score games. But no, I'm not going to write a contentious review for the sake of doing it. As a smaller site like us, or I should say a really small site like us, you know, you build your core audience by, you know, being trustworthy, by, you know, even when people disagree with you, they value your input. And you have to have that. The moment you compromise that, the whole fucking Jenga tower falls apart. You have to have that trust. So I would never compromise what I personally feel, because I think that would be reflected. I don't think I could write a proper review based on an oppositional opinion. I don't think I could. I think people would be able to see right through it anyway.
I wouldn't – not even – well, no, I wouldn't do that because I don't see the point in it.
No.
Like, who cares if you get 3 million clicks? I don't know.
Yeah.
I would rather have the small – core audience that we have and maintain our integrity than have like a huge audience by posting like
can you imagine like
10 best asses in video games?
Not like just browsing like any major site and reading the opinions on those sites. I just want to get out of there anyway. Like the user comments on other sites are awful.
I can't.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I read them, because I sit there and I'm like enraged and I'm like.
Yeah. It like gets me angry reading them.
Yeah. I don't know why I don't know why it gets me so angry, but it's just like, I think the problem is that these are the sort of people that, you know, I've said this before, but they call themselves hardcore gamers. They call themselves whatever they like. It's all semantics, but it's just so frustrating that quote-unquote hardcore gamers are just so divisive and ignorant and dismissive of things. Video games are cool. You like video games. Play them instead of bitching about them so much. Please. I would appreciate it.
And opposite that, I love reading the comments on our site.
Yeah, we get some really good ones. Like even when I have it out with people, I like the fact that I am talking with someone. And most of the comments I'm good with it. I've never not approved a comment because I think that person's being a dick. I've never had to do that. You know, we have that in our privacy policy, in our commenting policy. Like, you know, if you are an absolute insulting dick, I'm not going to approve your comment and you can't comment on the site. But I've never had to, you know, even with people who criticize us, I've never had to do that. So I am thankful for that.
Yeah, I mean, when people disagree, they talk it out, which is, you don't just jump to conclusions and start calling names and such.
I don't think there's been any name calling, so that's good. Actually, no, there might have been some, but whatever. I mean, it's really been
minor.
It's minor.
Yeah.
So it's all good. Hugh asks, what was your first console which you bought after its generation had passed? Now, see, if it's me personally, like me, Craig Lupinski, and not like my family, it would probably be the NES. Because, like, we had an NES. It was like family. It was like a, you know, family appliance. But I bought my own NES to have my own machine. So I guess it would be the NES.
Yeah. Actually, it might be NES for me, too, because my brother sold our original one, and I had to rebuy it. But, I mean, we did have one in his heyday. I'm trying to think of, like, one that I went back and bought retroactively that we never owned. Maybe the Saturn?
Huh. I'm trying to think, too, because I don't know what I went back. Yeah, I can't think of what one I went back, the first one I went back and bought. That's tough to say. That I owned.
Might be either the Saturn or the Virtual Boy for me.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe the Virtual Boy, and that's pretty recent, too. That's a recent thing for me, so I don't know. Maybe the Nomad? I don't know.
I think mine was probably the Genesis, not counting the NES, which I had to rebuy, too.
Man, our family's really had it out for the NES.
Yeah.
Mine died at some point.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. But I have one now, so.
Yep, all is well. Tyler asks, have you ever had the urge to custom paint one of your systems? If so, what ones? Absolutely not.
No.
Sort of, but, like, never seriously. Like,
I would buy a separate one. If I had that urge, which I don't, I would buy, like, a new one to do it, because I don't want to muck up the ones I have.
My NES is actually adorned with a, like, skull sticker that my brother stuck on it when we were little.
Now, wait a second. Your brother sold your NES, and then you had to rebuy it, and he stuck a sticker on it?
No, he sold the SNES.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. My bad.
Yeah. The NES.
I'm like, what a dick.
It was his, and he needed drugs, so it's fine. But, yeah, no, the NES still has, like, a skull sticker on it.
Gotcha.
From when we were little. I was thinking about removing it, too, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, see, if that were the case, like, if I had a sticker on mine because it was there since I was a kid, I would do that. But I don't really own anything from when I was a kid, so there goes that.
Yeah.
Wait, did Chris answer? Chris?
No, I have not had the urge to paint any of my systems.
There we go. Andrew, do you enjoy stand-up comedy? Which, if any, stand-up comedians have you seen live? Stand-up comedy is okay. It's really hard to find someone who's, like, specifically in tune with your humor, you know? But I saw George Carlin before he died, and that was pretty ace. He was, you know what, in his videos and, like, his TV appearances and stuff, he must be, like, really, like, I mean, those must be specifically edited because, I gotta tell you something. When I saw him live, I swear to God, like, half that man's body movements were involuntary. Like, that guy was already falling apart. Yeah. I'm like, man, this guy is, like, in person. Like, God, I'm super old, and he's just kind of jittering around. I'm like, oh, man.
It's hard for me to watch people like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, he was hilarious, though. Oh, my God. He was so funny in person. And just, like, the things that weren't part of, like, his act. Like, he's just funny, period. Like, he came out on stage, and he started talking, and someone way in back went, woo! And he's like, hey, sit around, this ain't a fucking rodeo. Like, George Carlin rules. He was funny.
What's the dude from, little Asian guy from Mad TV?
Oh, I don't know.
I have no idea.
He likes to scream about debuts. Is it Bobby Lee?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Might be Bobby Lee. I've seen him live.
And how was that?
It's pretty funny.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. He was with a few other people, but I think he's the only, like, famouser one. It was a show called The Kims of Comedy.
Okay.
Instead of The Kings, because they're all
Asian. Yeah, because they're all Asian. Yeah.
They're all Asian, yeah.
I had a friend who went to see Dane Cook back in his heyday. I can't imagine what that was like. Probably had, like, a huge venue, because that guy was, like, I mean, what happened? He kind of fell apart, but, like, he was, like, a superstar.
He was huge at the time.
And it's funny for a man who never wrote a joke in his life.
Oh, damn.
Now, what I mean is, like, he doesn't have punchlines. He just says things, like, really excitedly. And some of them are funny. Like, his Kool-Aid bit always gets me. We're like, oh, yeah, no Kool-Aid, man. My dad's going to be angry. Clean this up. Like, I laugh. I think that's funny. But there's no joke there. There's no joke. He's just loudly saying things and flailing about, and that's Dane Cook. But.
Yep.
I've seen Lewis Black.
Oh, nice. How was that?
It was pretty good. That was a couple of years ago. And I've seen Joel McHale, who is on Community.
Yeah.
And he hosts The Soup.
Yep.
And how he was pretty funny, too.
It's cool.
I don't know, in person, I think they're funnier. Comedians are funnier. I think it's easier to laugh. Like, if...
Well, because I think you're sort of, like, it's infectious. Like, you're in this audience, and you're sort of, like, you know, there's an energy to it, and everyone else is laughing.
Yeah, it's definitely not the same watching it on TV.
No.
Or whatever.
Yeah, like, if there's a so-so comedian on TV, you're like, oh, this fucking sucks. There's, like, there's one in person, you're like, oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, this ain't so bad. I would, are there any you would like to see?
I want to see Louis C.K.
I would like to see Louis C.K. as well.
Because he's funny.
Yeah.
He, like, makes me laugh and depressed at the same time.
But, yeah, I would like to see him. I would like to see... You know who I like as, like, a comedian, but, like, he's sort of like an asshole? I like Bill Maher.
Bill Maher?
Yeah. Mm. I think he's funny. What can I say? But he's kind of a dick, so...
Yeah, he's... I think he might be too much of an asshole for me.
Well, thankfully, I never have to hang out with him, so...
Also, I just started to, like, hate his face.
I hate his face? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. I hate Bill Maher's face, so I don't think...
Like, seriously, he always has this, like, little smug look
He's
on.
He's always smug. I know, that's part of his asshole. Like, I'm like, wipe that off your face right now.
I just hate to look at his face.
Kind of reminds me of, like, George W. Bush. He's always, like, he just says things, and he's got that look on his face like, I did good right now, didn't I?
Yeah, no, but yeah, Bush always has this face look like, I'm so smart. It's like,
every yeah, time even I as see... he was, like, mispronouncing words and stuff, yeah. But Bill Maher does it, and you're just kind of like, well, now you went from being a comedian to being kind of smarmy. nope, you're right.
But I hate looking at him, so.
I hate looking at him. That's awesome. I love it. I don't blame you. What about you, Chris? Anyone particularly you like to see?
I don't think so.
No.
Chris hates comedians.
No, I like comedians, but I mean, I can't think of one.
He has a joyless life.
That I'd like to see in particular, you know, the ones that I would want to see, like George Carlin or whatever, Mitch Hedberg, you know, they're all dead, so.
They are dead.
Thank you, drugs.
Yeah.
Logan asks, what do you think about the games as art debate? You can watch, you can listen to last episode. I know. Do you think they are? Rarely. How about you guys?
Hey, Chris, you didn't get to weigh in last episode.
Yeah.
Here's your big chance.
I think it varies. I mean, you know, it depends on the intent, and it depends on, you know, a lot of things. I know that's
hey, listen to the episode,
guys said,
that's me, but... that's what I said.
Well, it's like what this poster says, you know, it's the same with movies, you know, big action movies are maybe not so much art, but some smaller, you know, more story-driven or whatever movies are, you know, it's the same with games. It varies.
Yeah, yeah, the topic's very, very broad, and it's... And people had some contention with the things that, you know, particularly I said last episode. I mean, that's really what's hard about a podcast, though, because there's no time to edit what you're saying. Like, I guess I can, like, edit the podcast and, like, re-record my lines.
No, fuck that.
No, I'm not doing that. You know, it's really hard to say exactly what you want to say, how you want to say it.
Yeah.
You know, during a fluid conversation, so... Like, I think I came across as saying, like, anything that's being sold for money can't be art, and obviously I don't mean that. But yeah, so I think we're sort of in some level of agreement with what Logan's saying here. Josh, what do you think of the status of game reviews today with people making a huge deal of any game being anticipated gets lower than expected? For example, Destructoid's review of Batman getting an 8.5. I think it's stupid.
Did you guys see the Mega 64 video about the Uncharted 3 review?
Yep. That's exactly what it's like.
That was, like, awesome and on point.
And I know, and it's always by people who've never even played the game.
Yeah.
And even if you play the game and you still disagree, that's okay. It's okay to disagree. It's okay.
I like it better when people disagree.
I like it better, too, because awesome conversations come out. I mean, awesome conversations come out when you agree with someone. But when someone disagrees and knows how to express that disagreement without being a super dick,
yeah,
like, awesome conversations come out of that, too. I wish people knew how to do that more. I wish people knew how to disagree politely more.
Yeah.
Most TV and less people who comment know how to do that. So good on you guys. You guys are awesome.
Why is an 8.5 such a bad score?
8.5 is so good.
It's so good.
I know.
Because people are conditioned to believe that the scale ends at like 6, where that's like abysmal, and like 7's average, and 8 is like, well, that's pretty okay. Like, no one uses the whole scale, and when people use the whole scale, like Destructoid does, 8.5 is considered a very good score for Destructoid.
And just read the review.
Yeah. I know, really, right, exactly. Read the review. All those words are there for a reason.
You ruined the Metacritic score.
Oh, I know. People actually say that. You brought down Metacritic. Who fucking cares? Why does that matter? Buy the game, and if you like it, you win. There's literally no loser here. I don't get it. Oh, man.
I really wish Metacritic would switch to like more like Rotten Tomatoes, where it's either like yay or nay. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah. I don't know. Because it's like weighted, but they don't tell you how it's weighted.
Yeah.
Which is like, then how do I know, you know, that this score is an accurate score if you don't tell me how you weigh your reviews? Sucks.
Uh-huh.
Matt asks, in your opinion, with news just being a click away, do you feel that video game magazines are relevant anymore? Also, what are some of your favorite video game magazines? I still do because I like holding something in my hands and reading it. I have... You know, an iPad, and I have some digital magazines on there because they're hard to get here in the U.S., like Edge or Games TM, for instance. But generally speaking, I prefer to have like a physical book or magazine in my hand. I have books right here on my coffee table with me right now, and magazines as well, video game magazines, because I prefer to have that physical thing. Because here's the thing, you know, when it comes to news, you might be able to get the actual news faster from the internet. But when it comes to writing and hearing someone else's opinion, like, I mean, I'm not saying everyone on the internet's like a bad writer and everyone who writes in a magazine is a good writer, but like, sometimes, you know, you can only get a certain writer in a magazine because they write for that magazine and that's where their content is. And if they're a particularly good writer and you like their points, that's why you buy the magazine. Not to get the news or the reviews first, but to actually read what that writer has to say. And I value that sort of thing. So, like, that's why I pay, like, $1 million to get Retro Gamer here in the U.S. Because Retro Gamer is my favorite video game magazine. Because like, when I read Retro Gamer, not only am I entertained, but I feel like I learned something. Like, I really value, like, knowing about video game history and knowing about how games are designed. Like, I have books in my house about video game history. I have books in my house about theories of video game design. Those things are very important to me. And that's why I pay that kind of money for Retro Gamer, because, like, I'm not getting this kind of content on the internet, not this way. So, there you go.
I just like to read on the toilet.
There is that, too. There is that, too. Or just, you know, hanging out on the couch with the cats or whatever, you know?
I also, yeah. I like looking at, like, page layouts, like, on each page, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, different.
Yep.
It's not the same as reading it on, like, reading an online site where every single page is exactly the same.
Yeah.
See, I feel like I read more on the internet to just gain information, whereas, like, read a magazine more for, like, enjoyment.
Yeah, same here.
And there's some interchangeability there. Sometimes you read a magazine, like Game Informer here in the U.S. gets a lot of exclusives, so in that case you're reading it for information. And there are some really great writers online, so then you read that also for, you know, pleasure as well. But, you know, there's some crossover there. But that, generally speaking, that's how I feel.
And there's, like, a lot of exclusive interviews and such and developer insight and stuff in magazines.
I mean, that's why I love, like, Nintendo Power. They have a lot of, like, cool exclusive stuff in there, a lot of great interviews and...
I mean, I have an older one with Hideo Kojima, and it's like he's not even talking about like Nintendo games or anything. He's just like talking about him making games and such. Yeah. It's like really good.
That one was cool because he was like, I mean, I don't know how old the one you're talking about. They had an interview with him not that long ago, and he was saying something how like cutscenes and video games like don't mix.
Like, yes,
that's what I've been saying all along, and it's just funny to read like Kojima saying that.
Somebody should tell him that.
I know. So. Right.
He also says like something about like people who originally got into game development were like people who couldn't get jobs in other fields, so they like had to like take the video game development, which I think is like really interesting.
Right. Right. Exactly.
They failed at like at their higher aspirations, and went, I got to work at a video game company now.
Yep.
Back in the 80s when the scene was starting, so I think that's cool.
I think that's definitely very interesting. Yep. So there's definitely some value still left in magazines, I think. If you're looking for that kind of content, if you want interesting and varied content, there are definitely content. There's definitely content in magazines that you're not going to find online. But if you're just looking for basic news, you know, maybe a basic feeling on whether a game is good or not, or you know, a game announcement, you can get that online, no problem. But for me, that's not the only thing I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And what are some of your favorite video game magazines?
I like EGM and Nintendo Power. I mean, EGM, I'm not big on their reviews.
That's how I am with Game Informer. Like, I've really... Like, I harp on Game Informer a lot because I can't... Anything that requires an opinion in Game Informer, I can't trust.
I think Game Informer is pretty good for news, actually.
They're really good for news and certain features and stuff. Like, anything that doesn't require an opinion... Game Informer is actually really good at, and the last few issues, I'd say in the last like 3 or 4 months, I've actually really enjoyed them. So, I'm the same way with Game Informer. Don't like their opinions, but everything else I quite like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris?
I like Nintendo Power.
It's unanimous. It's a good magazine.
Yeah, my subscription's done, but... I think the last time I got it was like $5 for a year. So I was
did. That's what I did.
And then it ran out and I never renewed it.
Yeah, I did that too. So
So I don't get any video game magazines right now, but Nintendo Power is probably the one I like the most.
Yeah, I get Nintendo Power, and I get Retro Gamer, and I get Game Informer.
Yeah.
And for a while there, I was also getting U.S. PlayStation Magazine and the official Xbox Magazine, because those were also $5. And I'll tell you something, I really didn't like those magazines as much as Nintendo Power. And, you know, yeah, I know I'm partial to Nintendo. I'm also pretty hard on Nintendo, too, let's be honest. But it's just because Nintendo Power Magazine is just a good magazine. The other ones just felt sort of joyless.
Nintendo Mauer.
Nintendo Mauer. It's a good magazine. Michael, what do you think of the Banjo-Kazooie series, and do you think Nuts and Bolts was a good addition to the series? I like Banjo-Kazooie. I like Nuts and Bolts. I kind of wish there was a new Banjo-Kazooie game. Preferably a platformer.
Honestly,
that's not all I have to say.
I'm not big on this. Big on the games.
No? Banjo-Tooie was very big. That was probably my biggest complaint. Like, these are some massive levels. And, of course, when you're playing it back then, you didn't see levels like that. So you're like, wow, this is so big. And then, like, a couple hours in, you're like, fuck, why am I walking through this shit again?
I got both games back in 99, I think. And I just remember, like, thinking that the gameplay just wasn't as fluid and smooth as, like, Mario 64 or something. And I don't know, I felt the levels were too big.
In Banjo-Kazooie or Banjo-Tooie?
Both.
See, I thought Banjo-Kazooie had the right, had pretty much a really good size. I think they were, you know, they took Mario 64 levels and blew them up a bit, but they were still pretty, I don't want to use the word dense, but that's the closest word I can think of. Like, they were still packed. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of wasted space in those levels.
Yeah. I replayed it on Xbox, and I agree with you. I think they're smaller, but I think they're kind of tedious.
Okay, fair enough. But I think Banjo-Kazooie's levels are great. Banjo-Tooie's, on the other hand, though, that's where levels get way too big.
Yeah, I agree. I really like the first Banjo-Kazooie. Yep. And I didn't play Banjo-Tooie until it came out on Xbox, and I don't know if it's because I didn't play it at the time or what, but I could never go and finish it. I just thought the levels were too big. It just wasn't that fun.
And I think Donkey Kong 64 lies somewhere in the middle, where some parts of some levels are too big. Particularly the Egyptian level, and they're just like, ugh, running up these fucking stairs and shit again, like, no thanks.
Donkey Kong just got ridiculous with the five damn Kongs.
Yeah, collecting all the bananas with each one.
That game. I liked it, though. I liked Donkey Kong 64.
I liked it at the time, but
I liked it at the time, but I haven't gone back, and I'm kind of interested to see what I'd think.
Yeah, you don't want to taint that. You're like, nope, I enjoyed it back then, now I'm good.
I really like Nuts and Bolts, too.
Yeah, I thought it was a great addition, but
yeah, I mean, it was different, but I think the humor was still there and the gameplay was still fun, so
yeah. I would be sort of disappointed if the series ended on that. I would like to see another platformer.
I agree. I would like to see another one. I'd like to see Rare do something that's not connected sports.
Oh, I know. I mean, people harp on Rare, but their last few games have been good. Like, they're not as quite as magical as they were on the N64, but they've been good. And
yeah,
I would love to see them do something else. I would love to see, like, a follow-up to Banjo-Kazooie or Cameo, even, or something. Like, I would... Maybe a new Perfect Dark game. I don't know. I think they could do something more than what they are doing, though.
Battletoads!
Jet Force Gemini 2.
Yes. Oh, Jet Force Gemini.
Just put Jet Force Gemini on fucking, like, Xbox Live Arcade for crazy.
Yeah, really.
Give me some interwebs on that, and I'll be happy. I'll be good. Boom, 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 boom. What game do you remember having the most hype around its release? Oh, God. Ocarina of Time. There's no fucking contest.
Yeah.
Halo 2?
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's a... I would never have guessed that. I mean, I know you like Halo, but, I mean, that's... I never would have... Wow. I went to the release of Halo 2, actually, and...
I mean, this isn't personal hype, is it? I mean, if it's personal hype, I'm not going to go with Halo 2.
I assumed it meant personal hype, because... I mean,
all right.
Because, I mean, it seems like when it comes to modern games, every game has more hype than the last one. It's sort of a tangent, but I've sort of become disappointed with the way that, like, video game industry has become, like, the next big thing. Like, who's talking about Deus Ex anymore? Like, nobody. It didn't even come out that long ago. So it's just, you just move from hype train to hype train. People just jump in trains like old, like, cowboy movies or whatever, so...
My answer still might be Halo 2. I remember everybody talking about it and getting pretty hyped up, and I went to the midnight release for it and everything, and there's long-ass line.
That was a really awesome, like, it was like Halo 2, like, Metroid Prime 2, and, like, Half-Life 2. like all around the time, weren't they? And that was just a really exciting, like, man, you could feel it in the air, like how exciting that was then. That was a really fun time. But yeah, Halo 2 was pretty fun though. I did go to the midnight. That was the best midnight launch of any game I ever went to. And, you know, I mean, I like Halo, but I'm not like super into Halo, so I wasn't that hyped. But I had a really good time at that midnight launch. It was a lot of fun.
Same here.
But Chris and I will have to go to Ocarina of Time, man. That was poof.
Yeah.
I was insane with like anxiety to get like out of school and go get that thing. And like my dad was like, no, I'm not gonna go take it again. I'm like, you told me you take me, son of a bitch.
And no, man, I was just like, let's see. I was just like, Mom, you have to take me to Sears to get this game after, because I had it pre-ordered at Sears.
And, I had it pre-ordered at Funko Land.
I had it pre-ordered at Walmart.
But no, and then she just like brought it home. She went, I just stopped by Sears on the way home. And there you go. Here's your game. Pretty much.
That's interesting. I had to beg my parents were, you know, they're my parents. We've talked about this before. But yeah, he wouldn't take me to go get it. He told me to go take it. He's like, you don't have a job, asshole. So just go take me to get the game. You're not, what do you have? What are you doing? You're watching wrestling. Let's go.
Oh, God, wrestling.
I had to save up all my pennies from my paper route to buy this fucking $70 game.
Yeah, no. My mom paid for this for me because she's awesome.
Ooh, yeah, that's nice. Now, I had a paper route, and if I wanted anything so much as like a toothbrush, I had to buy myself.
How was I, like 13?
I was 98? I don't know. Was I like 16? Yeah. No, 15 maybe.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, I was 15. Myself at 15.
Oh, yeah, I was like 10 or 11, so.
We know my parents were terrible. They would take I would hide my paper route money. They would take, I would come home from school, my room would be torn apart. Cause you hid your money in a good spot this time. Jared crossed your mind. It was hidden for a reason. Did you not consider the fact? What are you
They're testing you, Craig. Is it building
it's
a life
funny
still?
Now, but it's pretty devastating. It was pretty devastating back then. I can laugh about this shit now, but.
Good job, son. It took us almost 30 minutes to find it that time.
Now go clean your room. Fucking dicks. Yeah, they'll make me buy whatever if I needed something, like, you got a paper out. Yeah, and you have the money, so let's go. Montana, what's up?
I said, that's awful.
Hey, yeah, no, it's funny now. Like, I can joke about it now, because now I make more money than my parents combined do in, like, 5 years, but... Now it's funny. Montana asks, why do you think a cover system has been integrated into any huge first-person shooters like Call of Duty or Halo? The only game that I know of that it has is Deus Ex Human Revolution, and I think it implemented that mechanic very well. I'm sure it required a little more work, but it seems like it would make these first-person shooters more strategic and pay off from a gameplay standpoint. Keep up the good work, guys. Thanks, Montana.
Didn't Perfect Dark Zero have a cover mechanic?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it did. And it works. And it zooms out to third person, and that works. You know, and I think that these sorts of games really... I mean, they don't need it, because obviously they function well without it, but it would be helpful in games where, like, you know, your health is contingent on hiding behind small structures. Like, oh, I need to go hide behind this rock, because I'm beeping, and I need to recharge. And, yeah, cover system would make more sense there, because the whole game is based around taking cover to survive. So... I guess there's a point there, but the games also work without it, so maybe they're just like, whatever. There's no point.
You know, I
think Deus Ex is also part of its sneaking. So there's, you know, there's a dual use to being in cover and having a third-person perspective. So I think there's a couple reasons why that's in Deus Ex, but...
I think I found out that, like, the first Uncharted is easier if you don't use the built-in cover system.
Really?
Yeah, really? Because I wanted to beat the game on hard, like, platinum trophy it. But, like, I found that, like, just positioning Drake where I could, like, look around corners and I could shoot people, but they couldn't shoot me. But I wouldn't use the cover system. I'll just, like, stand in a certain position. And that made the game, like, way easier.
Hmm.
I'm kidding.
First Uncharted sucks anyway.
It's fun.
It doesn't suck. I'm exaggerating.
Thousands of guys. And it's fun.
He's a mass murderer.
Yeah. He doesn't care. He feels nothing. He's like, oh, I just killed 500 guys. Hey, Zoe, want to flirt? Or Chloe, whatever the hell her name is.
Bill asks, who is your favorite Ghostbuster?
Egon.
Yeah, see, growing up, it was Egon, because I'm a nerd. You know, I'm a nerd, and I am more... of a, an intelligent bookworm than I am a, I don't know, anything else. I'm not very coordinated or anything like that, so I identify more with Egon, but now I gotta go with Peter Venkman.
Cop out.
I know, I know, I know.
Everybody goes with Venkman.
Nobody likes Ray, though, so fuck him.
Yeah.
I would go with Venkman because he's the only one I can name. I'm sorry.
Egon Spengler, Ray Stantz, Winston Zeddemore.
Yeah, whatever.
Zeddemore?
What?
That was like Zeddemore. I don't know.
Zeddemore.
Now it is Zeddemore.
Janine Melnis. I know all their fucking names. Lewis Tully, Dana Barrett.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We all know that you started like.
I'm the greatest Ghostbusters fan ever. Vince Glortho, Keymaster.
What's your favorite food?
I don't know if I have one.
Really?
Yeah, I don't. I don't know.
I like seafood. I think we've been over this. Lobster. I like lobster.
Yeah, I think we have.
And I'm not a fan of lobster, so.
Yeah,
me neither.
Remember that. And will you buy the 3DS redesign?
Maybe. Probably.
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 Depends what he has, but.
Yeah.
I might do with, like I did with the DS and wait for the third design to buy again, because I bought the first and third for the.
Yeah. Oh, you guys, I want that fucking Ocarina of Time 3DS.
Yeah, that looks nice.
That is a sweet 3DS.
It's just a decal, dude.
It's not a. Well, it's printed on there.
Okay. Just looks like a black 3DS with a.
Nice, awesome gold trim, and then you open it up and all the buttons are laid out in gold. The 3D sliders in gold. It looks nice. Shut up. Shut up.
It's just a decal.
You're just one of those people that has to disparage something that you really want.
I didn't
but you can't
know the
have.
Aren't you the guy who buys all the special editions no matter what they come with?
Not consoles. Fuck that.
But you can't judge somebody for wanting this 3DS.
No, I can.
No, you can't.
It's like, I'm going to.
It'll make me a huge hypocrite, but I can still do it.
I want a 3DS XL. That's what I want.
Nah, I don't know. I'll wait till like there's something good there.
I'll probably get the second revision and whatever the last revision is, because I love the Micro and I love the DSi XL, so I'm hoping whatever the last 3DS is awesome too.
You know, they can't do a whole lot. About the only thing I can do is integrate the second side pad and a couple shoulder buttons. I mean, maybe make the screens bigger, but there's not a whole lot they can do.
Did you say integrate?
Integrate?
I heard integrate.
Maybe because I was yawning at the same time.
Yeah.
I try to play off, like, I don't know if you guys can hear it, but, like, if I have to, like, yawn or, like, sneeze or cough or burp, like, I play it off pretty well, though, I think.
You think I've been like on the toilet this whole time, so I think I'm playing it off better.
This doesn't surprise me at all. This is not. This may shock our listeners.
I just assumed you were.
Yeah. And so the next like 30 questions are from some dude named Azam. Yeah. So this is, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Azam Hour. Today we'll be speaking with Azam Ahmad.
Our special guest star Azam.
Yeah. What games do you guys think set the standards for other games? For example, Super Mario Galaxy 2, I think, set the standard for 3D platformers.
Well, I think Super Mario 64 set the standard for 3D platformers.
Yeah. Have there been any 3D platformers since Mario Galaxy 2?
You know what? There really haven't been that many that this generation at all. I'm very surprised how many. We've had more, like, side-scrolling platformers than we've had 3D ones.
There have been quite a few side-scrolling ones.
Yeah, there have been, yeah. Mostly from Nintendo, but there have been quite a few. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm sure there's. What?
New Super Mario Bros. Wii sort of like is setting the standard for new 2D platformers with the multiplayer and everything now, too.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly, yeah. I don't really know because I think a lot of games sort of like. I almost feel like Perfect Dark would have set a standard, but then people like, you know, think like Halo set a standard. In some ways it did, but like, you know, to me, like, I look at Perfect Dark and I look at Halo and I'm like. To me, like, there's no contest. Like, I feel like Perfect Dark is the far superior game, even with its frame rate hiccups and all. Like, there's just
so many options and stuff.
There's so much more to that game. And I look at Halo, and I'm like, oh, cool, I'm trekking through a meadow. Oh, cool, I'm doing it twice.
I think Perfect Dark was like, God, oh, there's so much shit in this game. We're never going to be able to top this. Let's do something else. So,
Yeah, so, I mean, I could point to Perfect Dark and say, well, this set a standard, but did it really? Like, I don't know, because a lot of games just sort of copped the you know, cop to Halo and Call of Duty.
Yeah, I don't think, like, anything followed the Perfect Dark formula after.
Nobody, yeah, nothing, not even Perfect Dark Zero. So, I mean, nope. Nothing that's even tried. Yeah, it is a shame.
I mean, I guess GoldenEye sort of set the spot for Perfect Dark to follow. Yeah. I don't know.
But is that really a standard if only one game?
No, I don't think so.
So, I think it's tough to say, because I think a lot of games just sort of cobbled together bits and pieces from other games.
Yeah.
If Steph is there, she's not. Moving on. He wants to know what she thinks of Uncharted 3, but I think Chris has played it, and I'm sure he'll talk about that later. Is that correct, Chris?
I will.
Okay, cool. Hey, Craig, just curious, what video game shelves would you recommend? I would recommend mounting your own to the wall, because that's probably better.
Like building yourself some shelves?
Well, no, because, I mean, you can go to, like, Walmart or something, or, like, Target and buy, like, the brackets and drill those into your wall or whatever. Because, I mean, I have, like, these, you know, these particle board ones I bought at, like, Best Buy or whatever. I'm sure you can get them at, like, IKEA if you have one nearby or whatever. But those tend to be sort of a – the IKEA ones are probably better. The ones I have are a pain in the ass to put together. If I need to move them, they're going to crumble into dust. They're not going to survive, and they're expensive. So I think it's really just more cost-effective and will look a lot nicer if you just mount your own to the wall. That's what I would if I own my home and I buy a house, that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to put up with these fucking big-ass bookcases that are stupid. What games that are coming in 2012 are you guys looking for? Well, we'll probably discuss at least quarter one towards the end of December, so I'm sure we'll talk about that here pretty soon. But
honestly, I'm trying not even to think about.
Me neither.
Yeah,
me neither.
There's too much right now.
I have to be honest. Yeah, me neither. Hey, Craig, any tips for a beginning collector? Do you think that a collector has to have old games? Because I am not much of a collector. I don't think you have to have old games. I think you can collect whatever makes you happy to collect.
But yeah.
I collect because I want to experience all kinds of games, and that does include old games. But I think a collector can just. They can do whatever they want. That's up to them.
I think a good tip is to buy video games.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
That is good advice.
I think that's a good tip.
Thank you. Thank you.
Since a new Call of Duty game just came out, what do you guys feel about game sequels playing and feeling like the previous games? A better example is Crackdown 1 and its sequel. Sometimes it's okay. Like, I liked Crackdown 1 and I liked Crackdown 2. I like Crackdown 2. And Crackdown 2 is probably the better game, but because it was so similar to Crackdown 1. It's hard to feel like it's the better game. Like, objectively speaking, it probably is, but the feeling just isn't there that it is. But I like them both. When it's something like Call of Duty, like, I think it hits a saturation point, and you're like, you know, even if it's a little bit better, just not feeling it. But, you know, I mean, clearly, I think that, you know, publishers and studios are looking at, well, this sold well, so let's do this again, and then it sells even better. So they're like, where's the incentive to... you know, do something different. There really isn't much incentive. People like it, and it makes them boatloads of money, so who cares?
So hopefully Skyward Sword is different, right?
Yeah, there you go. I just wanted to rant for a bit.
Me too.
I recommend Tumblr.com. Why do people always harp on the Wii and the 3DS? I currently own 150 Wii games. I own 30 3DS games. So I'm always pissed when people hate on the Wii. He just goes on like this.
Sounds like he is a collector.
Yeah, he is. He just said he's not much of a collector.
I know.
I think he owns like every 3DS game.
Yeah, I own something like 17 like 3DS games. I own like 80 Wii games. But I mean, obviously, because I mean, no one's going to think that those are small amount of games for those particular platforms. Obviously, I agree. I like those systems, and I think it's unfortunate that people who call themselves gamers are so quick to disparage an entire platform. That, to me, is just very weird. There's nothing to play on the Wii. Like, yeah, I own, like, 80-some-odd games. And even if I were generous, if I were totally liberal with this estimate and say, like, okay, half of them are, like, really, like, limited appeal games, that still leaves, like, 40-some-odd games that are worth checking out for almost anybody. So that's really not a small amount of games, I don't think.
I'd say that there's, yeah, at least, like, 20 must-plays on the system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And those are must-plays. And I think there are many more games that are worth checking out.
Absolutely.
Especially with the cost barrier being so low for so many games.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I agree, and I think it's frustrating that people are just so quick to dismiss entire platforms. To me, that's just so weird. If I can find something worth playing on the Samsung Nuon, pretty sure you can find something worth playing on the Wii. Just throwing that out there. So what do you guys think of the rumor that there is a 3DS Legend of Zelda and it's not a port, even though I really enjoyed the 3D version of Ocarina of Time on 3DS?
Is that a rumor? I thought, like, Ayanuma just said, like, yeah, we're working on a 3DS.
Yeah, they're working on it. And even if he didn't say it, I mean, you got to assume they're working
on it. Yeah.
So I think it's cool. And generally, I don't clamor for ports, but I almost would rather see a port of Majora's Mask. I know that's terrible. I mean, that flies in the face of a lot of things I say, but that is my favorite game of all time. And it'd be nice to play it, like, in a decent resolution and, you know, have it on the go.
The GameCube version is a higher resolution than N64.
Oh, yeah, when it's not glitching out.
The Virtual Console version doesn't glitch out.
That's true.
There you go.
But it's not portable.
All these rules, Craig.
There are two rules. I want it to not look like Vaseline, and I want it to be on the go. There's just two rules.
So what if the 3DS version glitches out? It's so many rules.
I don't think that's a rule. I think that's just a prerequisite for having a decent game.
But you'd rather have Majora's Mask than a new Zelda? Really, Craig?
You know, I would say it's close. Which I think is saying a lot in and of itself. Would I rather have it? Maybe I have to retract that. But I would say it's very close between
them. I would certainly like to have it, but I think
I would love to have it.
Here's the problem, though. I don't want another, like, Spirit Tracks or Phantom Hourglass on the 3DS. You're done. That's cool that you experimented with the Zelda formula. A lot of people liked it. It was a very interesting twist. I don't want to play that anymore.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind it. I liked those games.
I liked them, too. But we can play the flute, that's why.
Oh, it has nothing to do with the flute. I've gotten better at the flute. I was playing Spirit Tracks the other day, and I'm just like, that's the only Zelda game I haven't finished, because it's just so fucking boring. I got choo-choos.
I like Spirit Tracks.
I spent a half an hour, like, in the ocean realm, juggling jellyfish.
So?
Well, I'd rather be doing that than playing the game. I think that says a lot. I'm playing the equivalent of a Game & Watch game instead of playing the actual game.
I liked driving around and shooting rabbits. That was fun.
That was fun.
And I hate it, like, you have a passenger on the train, you can't drive like a dick. Well, fuck this guy. If he wants a ride, he has to put... Like, how many trains are there around here? You don't exactly have too many options.
There's, like, a bunch of evil trains. Right, if you want to ride evil trains,
you can do that. But when you're on my train, you shut the fuck up, and I'll do what I want.
Oh, just don't expect a good tip. Actually, I like the way they just bail.
Yeah. Right. In the middle of nowhere, like, see ya.
This guy's driving crazy. I'm going to take my chances with this snowman throwing his own head.
Yep.
But no, I like them because they're different. They're, like, not, like, traditional Zelda formulas.
Now here's the thing. I appreciate them because they're different. I don't want people to think that, like, I'm being dismissive of the, you know, creative take. I just don't like the result. I'm not a big fan. I don't hate it. I don't think they're bad. I don't think that's for me.
Yeah, I get you.
I like the changes they made, but I don't think Spirit Tracks is up to par with the rest of the series.
I'll finish that eventually. That's the only one I haven't finished.
Yeah.
They need to, like, I don't know. Like, yeah. Honestly, the train does get tiring.
I miss the overworld.
Right. I mean,
there's, like, no exploration.
There's no exploration. There's nothing. You're literally on rails. Herp derp.
Sort of explore on the train. I don't know.
And just what I don't like, and the same thing I didn't like about Phantom Hourglass, in that when you're operating the train or the boat, everything is handled through the touchscreen. Now, when you're Link, that's kind of okay, and I've explained my grievances on this. But when you're in these vehicles, everything you do, including firing and moving the camera, is handled with the stylus, and you can only do one at a time. I want to be able to move my viewpoint and shoot at things at the same time. That is not even... I don't even think that's an outrageous request. Why can't I not use the D-pad to do that? Because then I'm sure then they could... Oh, you can't play the game completely with the stylus. I don't care. I would rather have a game where I can see what I'm shooting at and be able to do that at the same time.
Yeah, definitely got hit a few times when I'm just, like, kind of rotate the camera around and then fire, but I don't know. It's not like you take that much damage anyway.
Well, no, but it's just sort of dumb, and there's no need for it.
I just hope they bring back the ability to write on the map. That was awesome.
That was cool. There were definitely some cool things in there.
And I like a lot of the touch items, too, like the boomerang. I like being able to draw routes for it and the rope.
I feel like you can throw bombs and aim them better than you can, like, with buttons.
But here's the thing, though. Like, that's such a, like, a cheap way to throw a boomerang. Like, you literally draw where it goes.
That's awesome!
It's awesome in theory, but in practice, it's like my first Zelda. Like, aim the boomerang? Nah. Just draw the line.
Well, what do you aim anyway? You just, like, Z-target crap anyway.
Nah, that's true, too. I guess that's a good point. It's just everyone's like, oh, it's so great. And I'm like, what do you literally drew the path for it. Like, there was no skill involved. There's nothing there.
Sometimes you gotta time it. There's, like, moving enemies. You gotta be at the right time.
I guess that's true, too. Hey, Craig, is your PS3 still alive? Yeah, but I don't even remember the last time I played it. All the games I've been playing lately have been on either Wii, 3DS, or 360. So.
I got, like, Metal Gear Solid HD and Uncharted. Oh, yeah. Just sitting here. Can't play them.
Yeah, I didn't pick that up.
And I have King of Fighters 13 coming in on Tuesday.
I think the last time I turned it on was a couple weeks ago. I did an update and I played some Super Stardust HD. Cause that is my favorite twin stick shooter. So
I did play some Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix at a friend's house. So that was fun.
I guess that counts.
Did you get the limited edition of Metal Gear Solid, Seth?
I did get the limited edition.
That art book is so awesome.
I haven't opened it.
It's really nice.
Is it?
It's a lot better than the normal crappy art books you get.
Well, better, since it's like basically a $20 art book.
No, it's basically a $30 art book.
Oh, is it $50? Game $50 by itself? Oh,
yep.
Holy crap.
Damn.
Transferring.
Hey, Craig, can you please sell me your Zelda painting? No.
Yes, I can!
I know, no.
I'll give it to you for free.
I painted that.
That's so nice of you, Craig.
I know.
Yeah, Craig, you're going to give it to him for free?
Can you paint me one, too?
Sure thing, Chris.
Just mass produce. I could become the Thomas Kincaid of video game paintings.
I don't know who that is. I'm going to assume he painted lots of the same painting.
No, well, he calls himself the Painter of Light, and he does all those Christmas scenes where, like, it looks like all the houses are on fire, and, like... I assume by the laughing, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know. Yep. I'm picturing Christmas houses on fire.
Just like Google Thomas Kincaid, and you see all the, like, I don't know. It looks like all the same shit, and he just mass produces his paintings. What he does is he has it printed to canvas, and then he has, like, master apprentices, like, just take, like, oil paint and dabble it onto the painting to make it look like it has texture. And then he sells those for a couple $1,000.
Oh, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, you got to get in.
No,
on that.
That's a bad idea. No, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's a better idea to give them.
It's
for
a great
free
idea if you
want to
make
Facebook.
Money. I just think that if you want to mass produce like Hallmark shit, yeah, I guess it's awesome.
I don't think I'm a fan of his art style at all.
No, it's the most like banal, fluffy, like yeah, no thanks. Ice. Oh man, Ice. I like saying his name.
That's a cool name.
What is your biggest gaming fa- Well, it only works in English, so I'm sure in his language it doesn't really... It's not the same thing. What is your biggest gaming fail? Mine is not being able to click triangle fast enough in the torture chamber scene in Peace Walker.
They do look like they're on fire.
Yeah, all the houses have so much light come pouring out of those houses.
Now, my biggest gaming fail is when I reviewed Skyward Sword for GameSpot, and I was controlling it wrong the entire time.
Wait, are you admitting that your review was
oh,
bad?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but no. But,
you didn't write that review.
No, the review still, my score is going to stay. The game was still awful, even if I knew how to control it, I'm sure.
Nice. I don't know. I mean, I fail at things. I mean, here's the thing. I'm not, like, the best video game player. I don't really
Don't be modest.
I don't care about skill. I mean, I can play games. I mean, you know, obviously, but, like, I mean, I'm not super competitive. I don't play on insane difficulty or anything like that, because that would probably frustrate me more than anything else. I don't get enjoyment out of dying a million times over. But I'm sure there are plenty of things I fail at in games. Like, I can't pick the biggest one. They're just all so big, but... Yeah.
I can't beat the second level of the 16-bit Lion King game.
Wait, really? I just can't wait to be king?
Yeah.
That is some bullshit, that is... though. There's, like, those monkeys that throw you directly in the water. I'm like, fuck you, monkey.
Yeah, I don't think, like, I could get the timing of the double jumps right, and I kept, like, crashing into tree trunks or something. I don't know.
It took me forever to beat Scar in that game, because there's no straightforward way to do the flip move. And I just feel like I would mash on buttons forever.
No, see, I used the Game Genie to go to the last level, and I actually, like, beat Scar really fast. I was like, what? That was it?
Yeah, I could get to the last level. I shouldn't say without a problem. Definitely with problems, because that game came in the end.
That Stampede level sucks.
Oh, my God. They could have totally handled that better. The Game Gear version, you jump on the wildebeest heads. Like, you're just...
Seriously?
Yeah, in the GameCube version, you actually... Yeah, the Stampede, yeah, it's actually more of a moving platform level, and you have to, like, jump on the wildebeest themselves. It's a weird level. But the GameCube version is actually pretty similar to the Genesis version. But, yeah, Scar is like, I don't even remember how to do the flip in that game. And you're like, oh, you have to flip him off Pride Rock. Fuck this! Tell me how to do a flip, then.
I'm sure, like, speaking of telling people how to do things, I'm sure the biggest game fail for a lot of people is... what is that level in Sonic 3 that's the circus themed level, and there's like a platform that like moves up and down, and you have to like push up and down on the D-pad to move it up and down. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
It's a barrel. Let's see. Type in Sonic 3 barrel on like YouTube or something.
Oh, I'm not watching anything.
Really? All right, anyways, there's like a barrel platform, and like nothing else, like, Sonic locks onto it, and you think that you're supposed to, like, jump up and down to, like, move it, because it, like, starts moving as you jump, and there's, like, an area that you need to get to underneath, and you think that you need to, like, keep jumping until the barrel moves down far enough, but no matter how much you try, you can never get down there, and then it turns out that you just have to, like, hit up and down on the D-pad to move the barrel up and down.
That's funny.
And there's so much complaining about that from everybody.
Oh,
but, okay. Yeah, now I remember running out of time and then dying when I was little on that. But, I mean, it didn't take me that long to figure it out. I mean, people, like, have stopped playing the game because they couldn't get past that.
You just kept going.
I did.
Nice. Chris, do you have any specific gaming fails?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's hard to come up with everything.
Off the top of my head, but yeah. Right. I am pretty perfect. You know, I'm on number one on all the leaderboards I play, so.
He is. I've seen his sin punishment scores.
Chris asks.
I didn't ask this.
Nah.
Chris. Lies.
Bozon.
Bozon.
That was totally Seth. I didn't say that. Chris. I'm sorry, man. What would you guys like to see in the next generation consoles? I would like to see more social capabilities. I don't need like Twitter feeds or anything like that, but I mean, you know, I like Xbox Live because I feel like when I'm playing a game, and it could be a completely different game than what people on my friends list are playing, but I feel like we're all sort of like in the same room playing a game. I don't know how that does that or why I feel that way. I can't really explain it, but like the first thing I do when I turn on Xbox Live is click the guy button and see what my friends are doing.
I know what you mean. I don't play on Xbox Live a lot. Like, I don't play online games or anything.
Right.
But I like it. I like being able to go and see what my friends are playing and
even see what they're doing. Like, it tells you where they are in the game. Like, I love that.
I like the party chat and everything, too. I mean, I've had conversations with people on there while I'm playing a different game and they're playing something else.
Yeah. So, more robust. I don't need, like, a Facebook profile or anything like that. I just something a little more robust and just build off what Xbox Live's already done. I mean, PSN does some similar things. I almost feel like it's disconnected, though. I feel like it does it, but I feel like it does similar things, but I just feel like it's sort of not as... It doesn't feel as connected in the way that Xbox Live does. Does that make sense? Maybe not. Probably not. But
no, I'm sure it does. Because PSN's is, I don't know, it's like off on the side.
Right. That, I mean, yeah. It feels like, yeah, I feel like.
It doesn't feel like it's a part of everything.
It's like much. Secondary. Like you have to like work to look at it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not as well integrated or something.
Exactly.
So I'd like to see more of that. And I would like to also see just, you know, different ways to interact with the game sort of like thought about right away. You know, like we have like the Wii Remote. Wii Motion Plus should have been part of that package right away, but you know, we have like the Wii Remote, we have the touchscreen on the DS, the Vita has that touch panel on the back, and the Wii U has this, you know, tablet like controller. You know, I feel like we haven't necessarily reached the limits of what traditional gaming can do for us, but I think we're starting to see diminished returns in that regard. So instead of seeing like the same thing over and over again just with some different ideas, I would like to see different ways to interact with those ideas. You know, like Red Steel 2 on the Wii, it's essentially a beat 'em up. It's a well-made beat-em-up, but it's just a beat-em-up. But it's awesome because of Wii Motion Plus. That's what makes that game worth playing.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to sound awful, but I'm, like, really content with how video games are right now. Okay. And I don't really...
There's nothing awful about that. There's a lot of good games. What am I playing right now? I'm playing Skyrim. You know, it's one of the games I'm playing. Like, there's nothing wrong with sitting down with a controller, or for some people with a keyboard and mouse, and just playing that game.
Yeah, I mean, like if the next generation didn't even come out, like, anytime soon, I'm, like, not sick of this generation yet, so I don't...
No, no. I want a new Wii, I want a new Nintendo console, but when it comes to the PS3 and 360, nah, I'm good. I don't need anything.
Yeah, so, I'm not sure what I'd like to see next generation consoles, because I don't even really want to see next generation consoles right now.
Yeah. I'm going to buy Wii U, but I don't... I don't know if I'm going to buy the next, like... Xbox right away, or the next PlayStation right away, or whatever.
This sounds, you know? I don't know if I'm going to either. And like, we're hearing like it might come out like next year or something like that. I'm like,
yeah, no, I'm not ready.
If it does come out next year, I probably won't, because I definitely want a Vita. That definitely is appealing to me, and I love Nintendo consoles, so I'll be getting the Wii U. I can't buy three brand new consoles in a year.
Yeah,
that's expensive, and then games on top of that, and also retro games I'm buying off eBay or whatever. Like, that's just so expensive. So. And maybe 1 year where I'll have to sit down and really think hard about what I'm going to put my gaming money towards, because two new systems and games to go with them, more than enough for me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I could usually only afford one console a year, one new one. Like, I remember when GameCube and Xbox, and then
came PS3 out, yeah.
And Wii.
Yeah,
the PS2 came out like the year before, and then you got, like, what, the Xbox and, like, the GameCube? Like,
with yeah, 2001.
And then...
About 10 years ago, actually, yep. This week.
Not including the 3DS, the Wii was the only system I bought at launch this generation, even. I waited on everything else.
Yeah, same. Actually, I'm kind of glad I did with the other two, because I got the HDMI port on the 360 and the slim model of the PS3.
That's good.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I feel like I'm running out of steam. trying to keep the enthusiasm.
Just keep going.
What are your thoughts about different game series having yearly releases? I feel there should be a certain amount of time between releases to prevent the series becoming stale. This is what we just talked about with Call of Duty. You know, they make a fuck ton of money, and people like it, so... I'm trying to find it hard from an objective standpoint to say, like, no, that shouldn't be done. From my standpoint, I feel like... there's a saturation point, and there comes a point where, like, I don't want to play, you know, certain games. Like, even if, like, a new Zelda game came out, like, every year, I probably wouldn't like that, I don't think.
Yeah. I think part of the reason I'm so excited for Skyward Sword is that it's been 5 years since the last one on a console. Yeah.
Exactly. And we had two handheld games in between, but, you know, still, yeah. I mean, but they're very different. They're not, you know, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's me. I just don't... I want to reach a saturation point for me personally. But if other people love these yearly releases, I find it hard to tell them, no, you can't have that. Would you ever name your kid after something from a video game? Like that couple who named their kid... I don't know how to pronounce that word, because I haven't come across this in Skyrim yet, which is something from Skyrim. Dovahkiin? I don't know. I've heard about this. I guess there was a contest. Was there a contest to, like, name your kid Turok or something like that back, like, when Seeds of Evil came out?
Really?
I think so.
Was there? I think there was.
Yep.
Sounds familiar.
But, listen, if you're doing it for just for a contest, you're a fucking asshole. But if you're doing it because you really feel like that's something you want to name your kid, and you think your kid is not going to get a beat up for it, then that's your business. It's not mine.
But. Name your baby Turok, win $10,000.
Yeah, there you go. Woo! But I probably wouldn't do it. I mean, I don't even think I could name my kid like Link.
you need to read this article for the Turok. The first infant born on 9102 are named Turok for 1 year by their parents. So, like, you don't even have to keep the name Turok for the baby. Had it be for 1 year, though. You had to name your baby Turok for a year.
Which means they would have held that prize money for a year. You had to, like, prove it was... You don't get it right away.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, a claim to do something similar. Like I said, if that's something you really... Because you love Turok, or you absolutely love The Elder Scrolls, then... And you think that's a good name for your kid? Whatever. That's your business. If you're naming your kid Turok just to win money, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's messed up.
But I don't think I would, personally. Mainly because I don't intend on having kids, so...
That's better than my family, dude. Let's see, my brother Josh, he has two kids named Josh.
It's like George what Foreman, is, he named all his
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, he thinks he's George Foreman.
My brother's name is Jordan. He named his kid Jordan Jr. So, all the kids can call him Joju. So, like, that's
Joju.
But that's from The Simpsons. All the kids can call you Hoju. So that's why I call my nephew now. I call him Joju.
There's like three generations of Doug on my cousin's side. Like there's my uncle Doug, and then my cousin Doug, and then my little cousin Doug.
I don't think I could name my kid Craig. Like, it's a pretty decent name, don't get me wrong, but number one, it seems sort of arrogant. And number two, yeah. It also seems sort of like, I don't know, not very creative. Like, I couldn't think of anything, so I'll just name him after me.
I'm not big on the naming after your own. I mean, which is common, so, but...
Right,
I mean,
right,
even,
yeah, clearly.
Even my dad did it, I mean, the first...
Yeah, mine too.
John and Johnny are my dad and my oldest brother, but... I am not big on it at all.
It seems like a very, like, I don't know, patriarchal, like, masculine thing to do. Like, I made you and you're mine, so I'm going to call you me. And it's like, well, I already have your last name. Like, that was already decided a long time ago that I already have your name. Now I need another one of your names? I'm like, Jesus. Nah, it's all good. My middle name is my grandfather's name. I'm cool with that. Anyway, just a fun last question. What will Capcom do next? That should be its own game show.
Release Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 Part 2.
Yeah.
I don't really...
Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom Turbo.
Capcom doesn't really bother me with the things they do.
Champion Edition? Even canceling fucking
that
Mega Man?
That was bad. That disappointed
every,
me. But
every Mega Man game. they just canceled Mega Man.
Yeah, they just canceled the whole franchise. That I was not happy with. But, like, everything else is like, oh, Revelations is going to be $50? Don't care. Mercenaries was $40? Don't care. There's DLC? Oh, surprise, surprise, there's DLC. Don't care. These aren't the best things. I'm not saying they're things we should champion. I'm just saying that they don't bother me, so.
I think, who was it? Somebody came out saying, like, Revelations would take 10-plus hours, and people were like, that's it? Have you, like, played other Resident Evil games? Like,
yeah.
You get, like, rewards for beating them in under 3 hours. I don't know.
Where do people get all this time? People don't even finish their games anyway. Don't even let these people fool you. Like, that's it. They're not going to finish it anyway. So, fuck them.
I think you have to finish this game to unlock the co-op raid modes, too.
Oh, really? No
yeah,
kidding.
I heard that.
That's awesome. Yep. You will play our game whether you like it or not. Then Azam posted a YouTube video, which I haven't watched. And he says, just thought you would like that OST. I'm not going to play it on the podcast, but hey, thanks. Appreciate the
We don't want to play it. We don't want to pay royalty rights.
Do it all the time anyway. we don't make money off the podcast, so it doesn't matter. Logan says, wow, same sum for the next time in Arizona. I kind of have to agree. I think I don't want to limit anyone's input, so I'm not going to tell people not to do it. But this podcast is going to be probably close to 3 hours.
Oh, God.
And... Yeah, you know, I would just ask people, you know, maybe a couple posts, that's okay. We have, I don't know, maybe like a dozen from us. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, he posted 12 times, so. Yeah. It would be appreciated if you save some for next time. That would be cool. But if you have something important to say, say it. We're going to read it anyway. But if this was like a night where I had to work, I would have to have left by now. So I can't do that every night. So try to keep it concise.
Uh-huh.
And Sally says, Craig, do you think there should be a new segment called Azam Wonders? I read that, and you know what? I sort of feel like they already did something. It's called Vital Information with Lori Beth Denberg. I'm like, all that, like, because that's the sort of feeling I get.
All that.
I sort of feel like I would get the similar feeling out of that. That's okay. I'm all set. Anyway, that's all our questions again. Facebook.com/TVNLast. Feel free to leave a couple, a dozen. Maybe not the best idea. There'll be another podcast the following week. So if you've got something really good, you can save it for then. You know, when you feel dry and you don't have anything to say this week, save a good one. Save a good one. Uh-huh. But I try to answer all of them. I want everyone to feel like they're included. So. Anyway, Seth, did you ever contact, determine a winner for Muramasa?
Can I have it?
Sort of forgot about that. You know, the problem is I didn't want to read a name on the air or anything, because the problem is I forgot to, say only people, give, a little cue for only people interested. I don't, want to call somebody's name and then they already have the game or something. So I think I'm going to have to draw a few names and just contact them in order and say, do you even want this game? Because I don't know if...
I would assume that people post it. I mean, I think people would say, I don't need the game if they were posting. But yeah, I mean, that's not a bad idea to say, hey, do you have this game? It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
So, I would enter Who Flung Only Once and not enter me at all.
Oh, that's too bad. Craig, you were the top. You were in the top, so...
I already own it. I'll take your statue, though.
Hell no. That thing's awesome.
That thing is awesome. I think it's awesome. All right, so Seth will determine the winner, and he'll contact them. Thank you, everyone who entered, and thank you, Who Flung, for the for the heated discussion. But we can talk about games we've been playing lately. I don't know about you guys, but I have quite a few to talk about. Does anyone want to start?
Mine's quick, so okay. Whatever. We'll just do this. I started up Professor Layton 4, and I am not getting into it as much as the previous entries.
That's what I've heard from other people.
Like, at all. Really? Because
I mean, I've never heard anything negative.
There were several things that were, taking me out of the game, though. Well, the first was, rats. They're like, rats that run around the city. And at first, I had no idea, what they were. I was like, what the hell was that? You know, rat just run past? And I didn't want to miss anything, so, restarted the game. Luckily, I just saved. And then this time I clicked on the rat, and you're like, you got a mouse coin. And then I'm like, what the hell are mouse coins? You got a medal. Yeah, you got a mouse medal. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Because, the game's not telling you at all. So I'm like, okay. Then I keep playing, and then, another rat runs past. I'm like, holy crap, I missed that one. So, I restart again. I'm like, have to get all these rats. I don't know what happens if I miss them. So finally, I, got online. And what's the deal with these rats? And apparently, there's, 99 in the game, and you only need 10 of them. And none of them are missable. I guess they, randomly reappear over and over. So, but I didn't know this. And the game's not telling me about it. So I was like, I thought I was missing stuff. And that's the first thing that really took me out of the game. And the second was this police officer lied to me. He's like, something will happen if you solve 5 puzzles in a row. Then I solved my 5th and nothing happened. I was panicking. Am I missing something? I don't know. And then after I solved the 6th puzzle, then something happened. And it's just the little animation after you solve a puzzle changes. So, I don't know. It just got off to a bad start with me.
Huh.
But after that, just seems to be standard latent puzzles and such. Not that far. I'm only an hour and a half into it. But, I don't know. It's not really pulling me in like the previous games.
Did you play London Life?
I have not played London Life.
I've heard that it's not that awesome.
Yeah, I heard it's Animal Crossing, but only the boring parts.
Yeah.
just like running around doing errands for people or something. I don't know.
There's a smoky back there.
But
we have to go back to the island.
What is that? What is that in reference to?
The dog Lost. Is named after the Lost monster.
I did not know this. I've never seen Lost, so
You're missing out.
I don't think so.
I'm okay.
I've heard enough about it from other people. Whatever.
Yeah.
No, that's all. I'm too like sad to play anything because my TV's not working.
Yeah, that sucks, man.
I enjoyed Layton, but I think it's like we were saying about the, you know, yearly installments of franchises. I mean, I loved the first Professor Layton, and I mean, I've enjoyed the last couple, but I feel like it's getting to be, you know, too many of them too quick.
How long ago did the last one come out?
Last year. I think it's been every year since,
and like, I'm sure we'll have the 3DS one next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be starting to get burned out. Yeah.
I still enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, but not as much as I was in the past.
Yeah. I burned myself out on games too much, though. Like, I did with Phoenix Wright. I never finished the third one because I played two in a row and then just started the third. I was like, this is too much.
You need to go back to it. The third one is so good.
I will.
Yeah. I did that, too, though. I actually played through, I think, the first two, and then I got to the third one. And I was like, I'll come back to this sometime.
Yeah. You need breaks in there.
Yeah, you can't play them all in a row.
So, what have other people been playing?
I played through Uncharted. Well, the new Uncharted. Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception.
What did you think of that?
Uncharted.
That's pretty much why I held off on buying it. Because I enjoyed Uncharted 2. Mm-hmm. But I guess I didn't feel the need to relive it. Right away, you know. I mean, I want to play it eventually, but...
Yeah. You still climb things and shoot things.
You do still climb things. You still do shoot things. You still do kill thousands of people.
Oh, that's really all I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I heard it can be really frustrating, though, with, like, bullet sponge enemies and cheap deaths. Is that an accurate grievance?
I don't think it was any more frustrating than the previous games.
Okay. Well, the first one was kind of frustrating in that regard.
Yeah, well, then I don't think it was any more frustrating than the second one.
Okay.
I'm not a huge fan of the first game. I did really love the second game, though. And, I mean, this is probably on par with that.
Okay.
It's just, like, when I played the second game, I didn't know what to expect going in because I hadn't, you know, been following it because, like I said, I wasn't a huge fan of the first game. But I ended up being, you know, blown away with all the cool set pieces and all this cool stuff that happens. And then, like, when you play the third one, I mean, I didn't watch a lot of trailers and stuff, so I didn't know what was going to happen. But you know to expect these big, grand, you know, set pieces and stuff. So, you know, you may not know exactly what to expect, but you kind of know what it is going in. So I wasn't as impressed with this as I was with the second one.
Okay. So since you're going, oh, this is going to be awesome, and then it is awesome, and you go like, well, that's what I expected.
Yeah, it was still awesome, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I think, Craig, if you were holding off on it because, you know what to expect, then you probably made the right choice.
Okay.
Because it is going to be what you expect.
Okay.
It's a great
game. Not that what I expect is necessarily a bad thing, it's just not something I needed to buy right now, I think.
Yeah, it's still a great game. I mean, I love the story, you know, the action is great, there's a lot of cool locations and stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a great game overall.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'll get like gift cards or something for Christmas, and that's when I'll get it. But yeah, I don't know. It's something came over me. Like, I've just been more frugal with the way I spend money, and like, I look at
specials. Doesn't sound like you at all.
That doesn't sound like me at all either. And I have more money. I mean, I have to replenish my savings after going to Japan. I mean, that has to be, you know, that's a little low, but.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm just like, it's easy, too, because you get over that hump, because there's that, you know, I mean, I'm online so much, and you just get over that hump of the hype where everyone's, like, talking about it, and as soon as you get over that, buy it whenever. I right now, I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
Yeah.
You know, I did at first, I'm like, oh, I gotta buy it, but, like, now no one's talking, this is what I was saying earlier, no one's talking about it anymore, so...
Yeah. I hate that these games all come out so close together.
Yeah.
Because, like... I really enjoyed Batman, and I was playing that, and then, you know, Uncharted came out, and I just kind of dropped Batman. I started playing Uncharted. I finished Uncharted. I dropped that, and I've just been playing Mario this week.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that's another benefit to being a little more picky in what I want to play is that, you know, I get to relish those games a little bit more before, like, diving into something else, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some better. I mean, that's another part of it. Like, I like being on the first person on the block to get a game so I can talk about it, because I love playing them, I love experiencing them, and I also love sharing my experiences with other people. But mm-hmm. I don't need to do that with every game.
Like, yeah. I have also been playing Mario, Super Mario 3D Land, which is awesome. It's
brilliant.
I love it. You know, I've always been a bigger fan of the 2D Mario games than the 3D ones. You know, that's not to say that I don't like Mario 64 or Mario Galaxy. I love them. But I've always preferred the 2D games, and this seems much closer to that than...
It is. It's really awesome how they managed to nail, like, a 2D game in a 3D space.
Yeah, they really have. And I mean, all the, you know, being able to actually have the different suits and stuff and not have to lose it after 15 seconds... It's so awesome.
Yep, I agree. The level designs, the levels are pretty short. Like, people are like, oh, it's a short game, and it is. But the level designs are just so dense, so perfectly constructed that it doesn't even, like, I said this on Twitter, but I really do this. I'm not exaggerating. Whenever I finish a level, I close my 3DS, and I have to sit there and just reflect on that level because it's just so fucking good.
Yeah.
And I just dive right in because the pace is so great, I got to do another one. It's just so good.
Yeah. They're so easy to just, like, replay, too.
Because they're not very long.
Yeah. I mean, I think the level designs in, like, Mario Galaxy are probably more creative.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? But I think I do prefer this game, this style of game, because I prefer the 2D games.
How's the 3D effect in the game?
Nice.
It's really good.
And it really changes the perception. Like, I don't buy into any of this nonsense of, like, oh, it's easier to judge jumps with the... No, it doesn't. I don't buy that at all. But what's really neat is that it actually changes the perception, because you have some of these places where it's like a fixed camera angle, and the environment may look one way with the 3D turned off, but you turn it on and you notice that, like, something that looked like a connected platform is actually, like, two different platforms. One's in the foreground and one's in the background. It's actually pretty neat how that works.
Yeah.
God, I wish I had money.
But does Mario feel a little squirrely in his movements to you, Chris?
I don't think it feels too bad, but I mean, I know people have complained about it not feeling quite right.
Yeah, because some of the jumps, like, I feel like Mario feels like a fat plumber on the ground, but then once you leap into the air, like, he's all over the place, and sometimes I have a tough time reeling in those jumps. At first, I'm fine now, but when I first picked it up, I will be honest, I died a couple times because I sort of misjudged my jumps and how they would have worked, I guess, and...
Mm-hmm.
Because Mario just feels weird in the air. Especially with the Tanuki suit, because he you jump in the air and he perpetually floats forward, whether you're holding forward or not. And that makes... You have to get used to that, because he doesn't just sort of, like float downwards. He literally moves forward and downward, whether you're holding forward or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little... That took me a few deaths to figure that out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one-ups are, like, handy, so that's not a big deal.
Yeah, there are a lot of one-ups, which I don't think is unusual for the series, but I mean, like, I think in Mario Galaxy you would reset to, like, 5 lives after you died, and that doesn't happen in this game.
Yeah.
Or after you turned off the game, I mean.
So, nope. But it's awesome stuff.
Yeah. And there's a ton of content, too. After you beat the game, there's a whole bunch of extra stuff to do. So.
Right.
Which I won't spoil or anything for anybody, but.
Yeah, don't think the end of the game is actually the end of the game. It's not.
Yeah. There's a lot to do.
Is it more than, like, Luigi challenges?
Yes.
Yes.
Mario Galaxies?
Yes.
Is it, like, brand new levels?
Our silence is only incriminating us, so...
All right,
yes,
whatever.
That's exactly what it is, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's... Well, that's good.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
And assume they're more challenging since they're at the end of the game.
That would be an accurate assumption.
Yes. There are some that are kind of like remixed versions of previous levels, like where they make previous levels a little harder, but there are new levels too. I mean, it's all a lot of fun. It never feels like you're just playing the same levels over again.
I don't know why, but I really like bonus levels after you beat a game. Like, I mean, they just seem thing with New Super Mario Bros. Wii and like, Donkey Kong Country Returns. But I mean, like, they could just put those games in or those levels in earlier. But I don't know. They feel like more special when they're post game.
Yeah.
Anyway, so have you been playing anything else, Chris?
I played some Gianna Sisters. Last week before I got Mario.
Yeah, because that came out in North America. It seems like a limited release.
Yes, it did.
You can get it on like Newegg or
Newegg.com, Walmart.com.
Yeah,
maybe a couple other places. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's very kind of basic, like Mario, like very early Mario. You know, where you don't have a whole lot of abilities. You know, it's kind of run, jump.
Right. It's all contingent on. I mean, there are a couple like things that shake up the formula, but it's basically contingent on your ability to platform.
Yeah. And I like that. You know, that's what I wanted going in. Just a bit pretty basic. Not basic. I mean, I don't want to sound like it's like just run and jump over the hole. But right. It's really good, you know, for what it is.
Yep. I agree. So. I like it more. It's my favorite, like, side-scrolling platformer on, like, the DS. Like, I like it way more than New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
What I like about the game is just, I mean, early on it's way easy, but the challenge never gets like super hard. Like even if you're going after one of those red gems or whatever, like the challenge never becomes like overbearing. But it's just enough for you to sort of like flex your skills and feel pretty good about yourself, I think.
Yeah.
And
I like games like that.
Yeah.
I don't want a game that's going to be super hard.
Right,
I mean, occasionally I do, but
yeah,
you know,
it's not overly frustrating, but you still get to, you know, test your skills a little bit, and that's what I like about it a lot. And the music's really good, too. It's a really good game. So, you know, if you're in North America, definitely check out, like, Newegg.com. Was it $20, Chris?
$20, yes.
$20, and it's a really good side-scrolling platformer. Definitely recommended.
Mm-hmm. That is about it, I think. So,
oh.
We go into your wealth of games.
I played a lot. Even though I've been very busy, I've also been taking time, because I haven't been writing or doing videos nearly as much lately, so I've actually been able to take the time and play my games. I did play Super Mario 3D Land. As I said, and it is awesome. I've been playing Sonic Generations. Dana bought this for me. This was not part of like the list of games I wanted to get. She brought home like a bag of like groceries, just some odds and ends she got at like Target. And you know, she said, "Oh, I need to go to the bathroom. Why don't you just you know, unpack that?" And I started taking stuff out, and the game was at the bottom. So that was pretty awesome.
How is the game, Craig?
I like it. I like it. The modern Sonic levels are like Sonic Colors, which I like. And the classic Sonic levels are not quite like classic Sonic. They're an approximation of it, but they're not quite the same thing. But they're good. I like them. I definitely understand some of the grievances about the jumps. Like, Sega has not been able to replicate Sonic's jump from the past games at all.
Nope.
He has sort of like this it's almost like the ground is made of metal and his shoes are sort of magnetized, where like that launch off, he seems sort of stuck. And then once he's in the air, he has some momentum, but that split second where he's launching up off the ground, he has some difficulty doing that. He's almost sticky. So, but
pretty sure that's exactly how I described it in that demo video I did.
there you go. I like it overall. I mean, the levels are nice, the music's good. Espio is in it, and we all know Espio rules. The structure's kind of nice. You know, you have three levels, and you have Act 1, which is classic Sonic, Act 2, which is modern Sonic. And then once you do that, like, challenges open up for each level. And then you go...
Well, what do you mean everybody knows Espio rules? Didn't, like, four people play Knuckles Chaotix?
I don't even know who Espio is.
Listen, yeah, Espio rules... No, first of all, that's the joke. But second of all, Espio does rule. It's not even contentious, so I don't even... But anyway, once you finish the levels...
Challenge.
You open up challenges, and these are, like, racing or collecting rings or whatever... And then you get keys for that. And then you use these keys to open up the boss. So there's a little bit of variety, a little bit, you know, it's a little different in its approach. And you can do more challenges than just what's required to get the key. You know, you can tackle those if you'd like. And you can even equip Sonic. Like, you earn points for playing the level well. And you spend those points on unlocking abilities and equipping them to Sonic. And a lot of them apply to both modern and classic Sonic, but some of them apply to one or the other.
What kind of abilities? Didn't they do this like with the early Wii games?
I never played those.
Me neither, but
I think like Sonic and the secret rings or whatever, like the rings unlocked abilities, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But here, these are like you always land on your feet when you get hit, like you don't stumble and fall backwards, or like rings, you know, take a little bit longer to disappear after you get hit, things like that. But overall, yeah, it's pretty good, and I like it.
Are there, like, unlockables for the 20th anniversary or whatever this is?
I know you can unlock Sonic 1. There's, like, this floating, like, in this sort of hub world, there's, like, this floating Genesis, and you spend, like, some ridiculous amount of points, you can play Sonic 1 on it. And I know you do unlock, I don't know how you unlock them, I forget. They just, like, you've unlocked music or something, so, yeah, there's, like, I think music and artwork, if I'm not mistaken, that you unlock. So, yeah, there's definitely some stuff in it. So, yeah, no, it's pretty good, and I like it. I play a little bit of Rayman Origins, which is really fucking good. It's almost like visual stimulus overload, though. Like, there's so much color and stuff. But the level design, I haven't played a lot of this either. But the level design seems fucking impeccable. And to me, like, that's the most important part of, like, a platformer is, like, the level design. Because if that falls apart, it doesn't matter how many characters or power-ups or whatever you have. The game's just not going to be that fun, I don't think. And this has fantastic level design. I would say, like, even if you've never played a Rayman game or never even liked previous games, like, this, it doesn't even matter. Like, this is just in a completely different league of its own. So.
This is a side-scroller, right? Not like Rayman 3D.
No, yeah, it's not like Rayman 2 or 3, and it's not like even like Rayman 1, which is a side scroll, but that game's not very good because the level design's shit. It's a side scroller, and it's excellent. It's really good. And there's a lot of variety, too.
I don't think Rayman 1's level design is shit. It's
like someone who wasn't even paying attention. He's like watching a movie or something, just dropped assets into like a level. Like it's. Just,
it has some, yeah, I mean,
it's nonsensical. Has, like, there's no creative, rhyme reason.
It has, like, some creative, like, aspects, but it doesn't flow together. It's, like,
no,
not...
No, it doesn't. It's completely...
It's, like, not designed for Rayman to make his way through them.
No, they're not. And, like, some of them, like, you go through them, and, like, some of the art or some of the objects seem really cool. Like, what is that music level, I guess? There's one... I vaguely remember a music level.
I think it's musical flower things. I don't know.
Yeah,
like
yeah. And that's really cool to see all that, you know, that art and those objects and stuff. But that level is a fucking mess.
I think that's around where I ran out of lives and couldn't continue.
Okay. I don't even know who made that. It's a blind person designed that. a blind person would have better sense than that, actually. Those levels are disgusting.
I think they have good ideas. I think they're just poorly implemented together.
Okay, I can see that. I can comment. But Rayman Origins, like, I mean, if the levels were designed, levels in Rayman 1 and the levels of Rayman Origins were both designed by, I don't want to mispronounce it, is his name pronounced Michelle? Is Michelle Enso? Is that?
Yeah. I believe
that's
how I,
okay, I'm pretty sure that's how it's pronounced.
That's how I
if, they,
pronounce
if he
it.
Designed both, like, he's grown as a video game designer because he went from shit to, like, fucking perfect. And so those are fucking awesome.
I have that coming in the mail, so it should be here soon.
Good, good. Yeah, because you got the art book. I got Beyond Good and Evil HD, which is still a cool bonus. Like, Beyond Good and Evil is a great game, but I already own it, and I really didn't need the HD version of it. Although I did play a little bit of that. I showed Dana the game. She seemed sort of interested, but... the art book would have been better. I played a little bit of Skyrim. Again, another game that I wasn't intending on picking up, but a friend owed me $100, and I had money, so I spent... I like it. I like it more than Oblivion, which I didn't really care for, because that game was just so vanilla in every conceivable way. But I do like Skyrim more, and I've been playing quite a few hours of that. It's always weird, though, when you hear people say, tell you how many hours they put into a game like that, because, like, how many of those hours were you going through menus or load screens or just wandering around? Like, you do a lot of nothing in those kinds of games. So hours probably don't mean a whole lot. But I like it. Let's see, what else? Oh, the Core Gang finally came in. That game, it's a real thing. It's in my hands. It's a game.
How is it?
It feels like a platformer that could have come out in the Xbox era.
It was supposed to.
Yeah, it was supposed to. Right. I say that not as a slight. And not even really as a compliment, just as an observation. It feels like a game that could have come out like 8 years ago. And I don't feel like that's necessarily a bad thing. In some ways, I think it's even a good thing because we haven't had a whole lot of 3D platformers in the past 10 years. There really haven't been that many. So it's nice that we have one. It has this neat thing where, like, you switch between characters. You have this big, like, suit, like this mech thing, and everyone actually just, like, lives inside the suit, and they just sort of pop up at the controls. But the suit adapts to that particular character, and, like, the arms become something different for each character. Now, that was probably part of the original design spec when it was on the Xbox, but it actually makes way more sense on the Wii because the Wii has less buttons. So, like, because each character has its own moveset, toggling between characters gives you different abilities mapped to the same buttons. So it overcomes, like, that input limitation that the Wii has. So you switch to, you know, one character is better suited for platforming, so she can do double jump, and her arms are like hooks, so she can swing across things. You switch to, like, this boy, and, you know, he beats the shit out of stuff. He punches things and spins around, and so he's more combat-based. And it has a pretty okay sense of humor about things. I think it's, if anything, it's probably more amusing than laugh out loud funny, but there are a couple points where I chuckled. It's fairly well written, but, you know, it can be hit or miss, I guess. There's some enemies that had, like, I guess they're rebelling. They're this rebel group of enemies, and they're sort of clueless. But they had a whole musical number. There was, like, a musical number in this game, just out of nowhere. So it's pretty good, yeah. I mean, it's a 3D platformer that could have come out a few years ago, which may not be the best thing, but I don't think it's a bad thing either. And it's fun, and it's pretty well written, and fairly well designed. The only real complaint I have about it is the camera, because it's a 3D platformer, and those almost never work anyway. But I like it, and, you know, if it, you know, sounds interesting to you, it's only $20. It's not very expensive, that, you know, low cost of entry to that party. And, I like,
yeah,
it. I thought you ordered this, Seth. Did you not get it?
I have not ordered it. I've been low on money and been having, like, sparse out what I buy, but I'm definitely getting this.
Gotcha. Okay. Nope, it's good. It's good. Not amazing, not great, but I think, you know, we don't have a whole lot of games in this genre this generation, so in my opinion, it is welcome. And I think that's about it for me.
Holy crap, Lost in Shadows only $11 on Amazon.
Oh, yeah, it's cheap. Oh, no, I played I played Freaky Forms. Did any of you
know? Oh, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I played Freaky Forms, and that's actually a pretty fun little toy box. I mean, the game itself really is sort of basic. It's like this sort of almost physics-based platformer where, you know, you have the touchscreen. Like, you walk by tapping on the touchscreen left and right, and the jump, you sort of have, like, this little circle in the center of the touchscreen, and you put your sides down in the middle of it, and you pull back and then release to watch them spring, and that's how they jump. So it's sort of physics-based in that regard. And, of course, I made a penis because they gave me the tools to make a penis. So I have a penis with a top hat. He's wearing a top hat.
That makes it okay.
That makes it okay. So there are some...
It's a classy penis.
It's a classy penis. If there was a monocle, I would have made a monocle for him. Actually, I made a really cool monster where it's... I actually took the top hat and turned it upside down, and the monster's actually just a bunch of tentacles coming out of the top hat. So that's one of my... So, no, I mean, it's a really fun toy box. The game itself is pretty simple. You just go around, like, eating things or, like, Animal Crossing, ferrying messages across or whatever to different people in the world. But the more you play, the more stuff you unlock. And it's just a fun little toy box to play in. I think it's well worth it. I think that's great.
I've seen, a lot of really cool monsters made from people. And it looks like you could share them with QR codes.
Yep, you can share them with QR codes. So that is really cool.
That's awesome.
Yep. So it's a pretty neat little game. I like it. I also played Go Go Coco Polo, which I wrote a review for on the site. My MacBook's battery is dying, so I'm going to keep this brief. It's awesome. It's an excellent game. If you have access to DSiWare or the eShop, I think it's a must-own.
I think I'm going to have to get that one.
I think it is terrific. And I would suggest reading the review on tvlens.net because I have like 6 minutes of battery life.
All right, I'll read the review.
I was elected to lead, not to read. and I think I downloaded Gargoyle's Quest, and that game's hard. But
that game is hard.
It's pretty nice. Pretty nice little throwback. So, yep, I would say that's pretty much everything I've played, and I've been having a lot of fun gaming when I have the time, but obviously I can't make videos, and right, I can't do all these other things while I'm gaming, so as soon as I'm not working as much as I have been, I'll find a better balance. But Anyway, unless you guys have anything you'd like to add, that wraps up episode 62 of the podcast.
Yeah, I have something to add, but it takes exactly 6 minutes. just end it.
Okay. I want to thank everyone for listening to this extremely long podcast. I hope you learned something and you laughed and you cried. And until next time, you guys take it.
I cried the whole time.